All right. Good morning. Is it still morning? 19 minutes of morning left. Okay. It's wonderful to see everybody's faces. It's wonderful to be here with everybody. We welcome the people who are on video. Thank you for being here with us this morning. We're going to call this meeting of the TRPA Governing Board to order. The date is Wednesday, May 25th, 2022. And it's 11:42. First item on the agenda is roll call. Mari, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding.
Here.
Mr. Bruce.
Here.
Mrs. Sagaski.
Here.
Ms. Conrad Seda.
Here.
Ms. Faustinos.
Here.
Mr. Friedrich.
Here.
Ms. Gustafson.
Here.
Mr. Hicks.
Here.
Ms. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Honigman?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novosel?
Here.
Mr. Rice?
Here.
Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Excellent. Thanks so much. For the members of the public who are joining us remotely, I'm going to go over some rules actually for the meeting today. To observe the meeting, go to trpa.gov. Under the calendar header, click on Governing Board Hybrid Meeting for May 25, 2022. There you will find a link to the public webinar hosted on Zoom. To address board members directly with your comments, raise your hand in Zoom by clicking Raise Hand at the bottom of the screen, the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the board. If you have used the dial-in numbers to join us by telephone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand and be unmuted. To the remote board members, if you wish to speak, please also raise your hand in Zoom. You will find the hand icon on the bottom of your screen. Remote board members may not use the chat box to make any comments, to have the sidebar conversation. Please remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on the background noise. Finally, I would like to ask all remote members to turn on their cameras if they are able. Members of the public who have joined us in person, please raise your hand at the appropriate time for public comment. You will be called up front to speak. Board members who are in person, please raise your hand if you wish to comment and speak clearly into the microphone in front of you. It's the same old tricky microphone that we've always had with a little face depiction on the microphone. Just push the button and the red light will come on. If you're viewing the webinar on a personal computer, please ensure that your microphone and speakers are turned off to prevent audio feedback into the room. We're moving to item number 2. Barbara, would you please honor us by leading us the Pledge of Allegiance?
Place your hand over your heart and begin with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thanks, Barbara. Okay, we're moving to item 3, approval of agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda?
There are no changes, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. Then the agenda is approved as noticed. Moving to item 4, approval of minutes. We have a set of minutes this month, April 17. Dated April 17, 2022, on page 51 of your packets. Are there any questions, comments, changes?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it's April 27th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you're right, April 27th. Thank you.
I'm in a COVID fog right now, so I neglected to send my clerical edits to Maria, but I will do that. Again, they're non-substantive.
Excellent.
But with that, I'm willing to make a motion to approve them as amended.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you very much, Shelley. Okay, we're moving to item 5, TRPA consent calendar. There are two items on consent, one of which was reviewed by Operations and Governance Committee and one that wasn't reviewed by any committee at all. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in person to be called on or in Zoom to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Shelley, will you please provide us with a summary of the April financials or the Financial Operations and Governance Committee meeting this morning?
Sure, thank you. As it relates to the financials, the Operations and Governance Committee did unanimously recommend approval. A couple of the highlights, two highlights, in fact. We're still having a problem filling the data analyst position. We did later on in the meeting discuss the upcoming budget and how we can address some of these vacancies as they relate to compensation issues. And that will be discussed, obviously, when the budget comes to us in June. Labor costs are on track and cash flow remains strong due primarily to high planning fees. So everything is relatively good.
Excellent. Thank you so much for the summary. Does anyone have any questions or comments regarding that consent item? I don't see any hands. So the other item on consent is the Oak Angel LLC proposed new warehouse office space building, which includes the allocation and transfer of commercial floor area at 1054 Tahoe Boulevard, Incline Village, Washoe County, Nevada APN 130-152-08, ERSP 2022-0028. Information on this item can be found on page 107 of your packets. Are there any questions or comments from the board on that consent item? Yes, Jim, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a question for staff and just maybe a little more information. I get that this is on a scenic corridor that's out of attainment. When I read through the staff report, and I apologize for maybe not asking this question a couple of days ago, but I just had a chance to read it last night. The statement under project description does say the proposed building design and new gate and wall will help move it towards attainment. That strikes me as a conclusionary statement. And I was wondering, what was the analysis? I mean, how did we come to that as staff, you know, come to that conclusion that it will move it towards attainment? Just want to make sure that the findings are solid if we're going to move forward. Thank you.
I'm actually going to ask if, I don't know if Brandy is online.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I'm Brandy McMahon. I'm the local government coordinator for the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, and I reviewed the project to prepare the staff report. The site, it's the existing site. It's the old Spitz and Lumber site, and there's a number of older rundown buildings on the site. So what this project will do is those older buildings will be demolished, and they'll build a new warehouse office building in its place and install a wall, gate, landscaping, install water quality best management practices, reduce land coverage on the site, and restore the back portion of the site. So based on those site improvements, I did find that it will help to, or the overall project has both scenic and water quality benefits.
Thanks, Brandy, and that is helpful. And I do trust that we did the analysis. I do get concerned when I sort of just read a conclusionary statement without sort of the backup to say, okay, I get this, the analysis was done. So I am kind of reading between the lines. I'm assuming with the screening that there's going to be more screening of the buildings than there is existing screening of the buildings.
Yes.
And I do get that sometimes, you know, newer construction looks better than older construction, but I don't think that's always should be the sole thing for a finding. So I am comfortable that there is going to be actually more screening than is existing on the property in order to protect that scenic corridor. So thank you for answering the questions.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Are there any other questions or comments on this item? Seeing none. Catherine, would you please take us to public comment on consent?
If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this item, please raise your hand now either in person or by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen, or by dialing *9 on your phone if you have called in, and you will be called on and unmuted to address the board. We do have one virtual hand raised. Carol Black, if you unmute, you can address the board.
Hi, Carol.
Hi there. So I'm speaking as a resident of Incline Village. I sent a written comment, and I guess actually my question relates to what was just asked around the scenic issues. I appreciate that your staff has been wonderful in speaking with me to answer methodological questions that I didn't understand, so that's very helpful. This is a fairly significant transfer of coverage units, a substantial portion under, again, a greener sustainability criteria, if I understand it correctly, from Washoe County. And I just questioned whether the balance in terms of what was going to be placed there and the scenic implications were appropriate. I'm not saying they aren't, I just was raising the question. I did also want to flag the fuel pump and fuel storage that is there currently, apparently, if I read the plans correctly, and it appears to be being maintained. Since this is a warehouse for vehicles, private vehicles, presumably it's a non-essential function to the proposed use and is likely, I would think, non-scenic and potentially an environmental risk, just the fuel storage tanks can be. So I just wanted to also raise that question. And those are the points I wanted to make. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak. I hadn't realized it was allowed with consent agenda items, so thank you. And again, thanks to the staff, Brandy, and Washoe County staff, who were very helpful in terms of teaching me content. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Catherine, anyone else?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Philip Gianfar, if you unmute, you can address the board.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Bruce and Planning Commission members. I just wanted to just clarify, I received a memo from the person who spoke just recently through Brandy. First, I appreciate the thorough review that she did on the proposed project. I know she's been pretty overwhelmed with a lot of work, like other staff members, and I think she's done an excellent job there. Hopefully she sticks around there because she's a great asset to TRPA. I understood there was a small topo, so I tried to address those couple of items that came in the memo from Carol Black. One was regarding the ownership confusion, because I think Oak Angle is what it is, and it was accidentally typed Oak Angel, which just as the clarification, we corrected that, although all the other documentation with the application and the TRPA package is all correct and correctly written. The comment came up about the plan area. This is in the Ponderosa Ranch regulatory zone, which is designated as industrial. So I just wanted to make sure that we understand that, even though it is in a scenic area. We are looking at doing a substantial number of items. I helped write the design guidelines with TRPA a number of years ago and then helped to rewrite them or refine them. So we're looking at meeting and exceeding the site design, the building design, the setback of structures, the parking and loading and circulation, the snow storage, and enhancing the landscaping substantially through that entire region, working with NDOT on the way our entrance works to come in and off the road, and upgrading all the lighting in there so that it meets the TRPA standards, along with substantial sign reduction, because we'll really have just only one sign addressing the property. The other comment that came up was that we were not awarded any land coverage. We were awarded commercial floor area, and it came in three parts. Part was what we had existing, part was what we purchased, and then a small amount, 5,226 square feet, came from the Washoe County pool, which we were awarded after a full review of the project and its merit, because we do propose to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and that is on the application and in the TRP packet. So we believe that our scenic quality will be substantially increased, and that we'll hope the attainment and that our commercial floor area was awarded based on the greenhouse gas emission reduction. The other item that came up was a discussion about a small fuel pump and storage facility, the fuel facility that exists today. We plan to keep that, and it is in fact covered by TRPA, Nevada EPA, North Lake Tahoe Fire, and Washoe County, and it is a approved structure. So I just wanted to let you know that that is the case. So if you have any other questions for me, happy to address them. But thank you for taking the vote on the consent calendar.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Anybody else on public comment? Catherine?
There are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Very good. We'll deem public comment closed. And I'm looking for a motion.
Move to approve the consent calendar, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We have a motion. Mario, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad-Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Yates? Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you, Mari. Appreciate that. Okay, before we move on to the next agenda item, we need the motion to adjourn to the TRP from the TRPA and convene to the TMPO. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Convene? Thank you, Cindy. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Okay, we have adjourned and convened as the TMPO. That brings us to agenda item 6. There are two items on consent, both of which were reviewed by operations and the governance. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on the side, you may raise your hand in person to be called on in Zoom and to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Shelley, may we please have a summary of the FY23 Lake Tahoe Transportation Planning Overall Work Program and adoption of the 2023 Active Transportation Program, ATP, Metropolitan Planning Organization, MPO, guidelines from your Operations and Governance Committee meeting this morning?
Sure. I'm going to focus on the changes. First of all, both items were unanimously recommended by the committee for approval by the governing board. The first item, which was the approval or the TMPO, Lake Tahoe Transportation Overall Work Program, the changes basically incorporated comments made by MDOT, Steve Teixeira on the South Shore Transportation Management Association, and the principal from Sustainable Community Advocates. Those changes were actually embedded. There was a link embedded in your board packet, which allowed you to review those changes. And they were mostly changes in amounts, in budgetary amounts, and available funding amounts. The next item had to do with the guidelines, the adoption of the 2023 Active Transportation Program Metropolitan Planning Organization guidelines. And this was precipitated by the fact that the state of California recently updated its Active Transportation Program funding guidelines, which made this update of the TMPO guidelines necessary. And I can, time is kind of the essence, Mark, so I can go over some of the three principal modifications that were made, but I know that everybody has probably had a chance to review the substance of these recommended changes. So it's probably a bit of a waste of time, but I can do it if you'd like.
No, that's okay. I think what we'll do is we'll ask anybody if they have any questions or comments, and we'll go from there. Anybody with questions or comments? I don't see any on the screen. I don't see any on the dais. So Catherine, would you please take us to public comment?
If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on and unmuted. And Mr. Chair, we have no hands raised to comment on this item.
Very good. Thanks so much. So we'll deem public comment closed. Thank you so much, Shelley, for summarizing all of that this morning on consent. Do we have a motion on the consent calendar for TMPO?
Move approval.
Thank you, Jim. We have a motion. All in favor? Well, actually, Mario, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Ms. Aldean?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates? And Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Before we move on to the next agenda item, we need a motion to adjourn as the TMPO and reconvene as the TRPA. Do I have a motion to adjourn and reconvene?
So moved.
Thank you. We have a motion. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes, and we move to planning matters. Section, that's item 7. 7A, resolution in support of Lake Tahoe Wildfire Awareness Campaign, May through October 2022. Information on this item can be found on page 225. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in person to be called on or in the Zoom webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. At this point in time, I see Jeff at this podium, and it's great to see you, Jeff. Haven't seen you for a while in person. And thank you so much for presenting for us this morning.
You're very welcome. And good to see you as well. Greetings, Mr. Chair, members of the board, everyone virtual and in person. I'm Jeff. I'm the Public Information Officer with the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, and I have the privilege of also serving on the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Public Information Team. And that group every year puts out a wildfire awareness campaign of one kind or another to try and encourage more property owners to take it upon themselves to prepare for wildfire, whether it be through evacuation preparedness or through creating more defensible space. This year, the theme of the wildfire awareness campaign is about ember awareness and is about evacuation preparedness. So we have presented in the packet today for your consideration a proclamation in support of that and in support of the TFFT's projects.
Thank you. Very much, much appreciated. Okay. Does any board member have any questions or comments, please? But
yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, this all relates back to the terrible fire in 2007, the Angora fire, which wasn't the first fire in the Sierras, but it was certainly the one that rang the bell the loudest in the Tahoe Basin. And one of the many, many positive things came out of that, and it was my privilege to serve on that bi-state commission, but one of the very positive things was the coordination and of TRPA with the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team and all of the fire agencies, governmental agencies in the basin. And they've done amazing work since then. you know, one thing that the Caldor fire did for us, I mean, we all know about it, and we all suffered through it, and our people in the basin here suffered tremendously from it. It did have a silver lining, and the silver lining was that it validated the need to thin the forest, to create defensible space, to harden homes, to be prepared for wildfire, and to have a plan, and to continue it. It's not a one-time event. And had the agencies back in 2007, 2008 just said, okay, we'll do this once and we're safe. They didn't do that. They recognized this is an ongoing task. And part of that task is educating the public and keeping it in front of the public. So this is a wonderful thing that the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team does every year. They need to continue to do it. We need to support them in any way we possibly can. And I urge the board to adopt this resolution and authorize you as the chairman to sign it.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate those comments. And we obviously very much appreciate your leadership in the wildfire area on the board as the chair of the committee. And very thankful for that. Anybody else? Any other questions or comments? I don't see any on the screen. And you're right, Bud. You're really right, because Calder came along, right? And I think the learning experience and the great guidance that your Blue Ribbon team gave us really gave us a lot of what we needed in order to protect ourselves. Okay, so we're going to public comment. Catherine, can you take us?
If any member of the public would like to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on and unmuted. And Mr. Chair, we have no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, we'll close public comment. Any final comments from the board? I don't see any. Let's see. I'm ready to entertain motions on this item. In order to pass, an affirmative vote of any 8 members is required for purposes of this resolution. Do I have a motion?
I'm happy to make the motion. Move we adopt resolution 2022-a resolution in support of Lake Tahoe Wildfire Awareness Campaign, May through October 2022.
Okay, we have a motion. Any further discussion? Not seeing any. Mari, would you please take us through roll call?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Yates? And Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, very good. We will move to item 7B. Update on the Chile-Tahoe Partnership status report from the Chile Lagos Limpio, including lake modeling and how Tahoe is global model for sustainable development. Information on this item can be found on page 227. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in person to be called on, or in the Zoom webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. And I think we have both Devin and Fernando on.
We are here.
Yes, thank you.
Yep, thank you, Chair. For the record, Devin Middlebrook, Sustainability Program Manager here at TRPA, and I'm joined by Fernando Coase, who's the Executive Director of Chile Lagos Limpios, who will be talking today about this international partnership. I really want to highlight that our our issues and our challenges, especially when it comes to climate change and the health of our lake, go well beyond our boundaries. And our actions have impact globally. Tahoe has long been a leader for sustainability, environment, development, transportation. And the things we do here teach and teach lessons across the globe and bring more sustainable practices to other regions. And it's important for us to keep that in mind as we are developing our programs, that people are watching and people are following what we do. So it's really, again, important to highlight. The Chile Tahoe Partnership is one of those international partnerships that we have that has grown in the last several years. Some of the board members might also be familiar with older partnerships such as the Tahoe Baikal Institute and newer partnerships around the topic of sustainable recreation when TRPA was an initial signatory to the Future of Tourism Coalition. I want to share this map here. This shows a location of all of the different countries that international visitors have come from to visit Tahoe and specifically to visit with TRPA staff to learn about a variety of topics from water quality, transportation, land use, forest health. We really do have, unfortunately, not during the COVID-19 pandemic, but that is starting to come back. We do really have that international attention and just want to highlight the importance of that. The Chile Tahoe Partnership, or the organization as it's known as Chile Lagos Limpios, started as one of these international visits in 2017 when a couple folks from Chile came to Tahoe. They knew about Tahoe as an international case study on managing lakes and the environment of lakes. So they came in 2017, and since then it has grown into an international NGO that has accomplished quite a bit in its short lifespan. For a little bit of context, here's a picture turned sideways of the lakes of northern Patagonia in Chile. There's 23 lakes in this region, and they're very similar to Tahoe in terms of their history, their development patterns, and the challenges they're facing into the future. Not only are the lakes and Chile learning from Tahoe, but Tahoe is building our knowledge of what's happening in other lakes in order to bring some of their best practices to Tahoe and implement those. I just want to highlight that the board of directors for Chile Lagos Limpios includes three folks from Tahoe: Jeffrey Schlattau from UC Davis Tahoe Environmental Research Center, myself, and Jesse Patterson with the League to Save Lake Tahoe. So we have science, policy, and advocacy all represented. And then I will again introduce Fernando Coase, who is the executive director of Chile Lagos Limpios, and I'm going to hand this off to him.
Thanks, Devin, and thank you for the opportunity to share with all the board and everyone who's listening in Tahoe about the project we have in Chile, the project which TRPA has been contributing for the last 3.5-4 years. And I'm very proud of what we have accomplished and the challenge of our mission. So go ahead. So just to give context, we are talking here about a district of 23 lakes and lagoons in the south of Chile, which are called the Northern Patagonian Lakes, they represent 30% of Chile's freshwater mirror. So it's not only a natural beauty, similar to Tahoe, but it's also a natural freshwater reserve, which is going to be key for our future development and our resilience to climate change. But go ahead, Devin. Not everything is going right. This is a satellite image of one of the lakes, of Lake Villarrica, which is a lake, you know, similar to Tahoe. And this shows algae blooms in any given day in October. And this is due to aquaculture production, urban centers without proper sanitary systems, agriculture production, motorboats, septic tanks, et cetera, et cetera. And this due to very rapid development of a lake that in the last 30, 35 years has grown rapidly. Lots of holiday homes have happened, lots of agricultural development, but there's no specific and strategic plan behind it. And the result is that we have a saturated lake where, you know, property prices are going down. People don't want to spend their holiday homes there. And it's become a problem for the government and for the private sector. Go ahead, Devin. So our reason to exist, and this, you know, just a couple of more examples of things that have gone wrong, and we've learned from Tajo, and we've learned from the case of Lake Villarrica, that once a lake gets contaminated, it's very complicated, it's very expensive to revert this process and do things right. So we have the opportunity here in Chile with, like I said, this district of lakes, which most of them are still pristine, to develop a framework, develop a planning framework, a new culture based on science and based on a dramatic cultural change to be able to balance economic development given by tourism, by agriculture, by real estate development, but maintaining the health of the lake, the health of its ecosystems in the center of the decision making. So that's our mission. That's what we've been working on in the last 3 years, and that's where Devin has been sitting in our board for all this time. Go ahead, Devin. So the situation here in Chile is a bit different from Tajo, besides being a district of lakes, so many different lakes of different sizes of watersheds, volume of water, and landscape. There's many more economic activities that coexist here. We've got agriculture, we've got aquaculture, we've got tourism, we've got energy production, we've got real estate development. So it's a mixed of economic activities which make the situation a bit different than the case of Tajo. So why we care, I already said this is a landscape which is beautiful, it's amazing, it's renowned worldwide, it's a strategic water reserve. We know that once a lake it gets contaminated, it's very costly and difficult to revert it. And why not? Yes, we believe that Chile world example of lake conservation and climate change resilience. And we believe that this knowledge and this case can be later on exported to other places in Latin America. Go ahead, Demi. So why we established this partnership with Tajo? Because you guys have 60 years of experience, we can go back in time and bring those lessons, bring those knowledge, and bring those years of hard work, of money invested, and adapt it to the reality of Chile, not make the same mistakes, and save a lot of money and effort to provide a sustainable future for this beautiful landscape, which is very much similar to Chile. I don't know if some of you guys have been in Chile, in the south of Chile, but we have similar landscapes in terms of our forests, in terms of our water, in terms of our prairies, similar challenge like of fires, of climate change impacts are similar. So it's complementary cases. Go ahead, Devin. I think I'm in the World Lakes Network.
Yeah, it's up on my screen.
Maybe go to the work areas. Just so we have three work areas, and this is the lines of work that we've been pushing forward based on what we've learned from Tajo and adapting to the Chilean reality. But science and research is key, and without proper data that's scientifically backed, that can help us make decisions, and we could be all over the place defining things that later on will not be pursued. So we're working in collaboration with UC Davis Tajo Environmental Research Center with Jeff Shalado and his team to implement a top-class monitoring and modeling program in one of the most important lakes here in Chile in order to develop a public goods or public use scientific tool that will allow us to, on one side, identify what land use changes will impact the quality of the water of the lake and provide guidelines to the private sector on what they can do, where they can do it, and with what standards. And second of all, provide guidelines and work with the government, the Ministry of Environment, the municipalities, and other relevant government agencies in order to design laws, norms, and a regulatory framework that can guide development in this watershed. This is Lake Llanquihue, which has the same volume of water than Tahoe, same, most, more the same size of watershed for urban centers. It's very much similar to Lake Tahoe. So that's why we're using this lake for our pilot program in terms of science. We're working that in collaboration with some local universities, and we expect for at the end of this year have the preliminary results of this interaction between land use change and lake water quality. Second, very much important, is cultural transformation. This is an area and that's in the center of our work model, which has to do on how can we change the culture and change the behavior of people, companies, holiday homeowners, people that live there year round, NGOs, on how they use, they enjoy, and they work in these lakes. Some of the impacts that we see in the lakes doesn't have to do with people being evil, but more people having no clue of the impacts that their common day actions can have. So this is why this area we work in different streams, environmental education campaigns, seminars, webinars. We're strongly positioned in the press. We do international missions to Lake Tahoe and elsewhere. And the idea here is to, like I said, provide a cultural change, identify what are the main challenges and start doing a work in collaboration with other agencies in order to transform the culture of the people that live in these lakes. And third of all, it's public policy. We need for this work to end up becoming mandatory and for public policies to be established and implemented in this lake district. So nowadays our regulatory framework is very, we're lacking of sound and intelligent policy to regulate the economic activities in these lakes. And that's what we need to work on. And we're working in a collaboration with the Ministry of Environment and some of the municipalities in order to start working on laws and norms. And that we know from your guys' case, it's mandatory in order to establish binding agreements. And this is just a summary of what we've achieved so far in these 3 years. We're very humble, but also we're very proud of in these last 3 years of pandemic and social unrest, we've been able to stay alive and raise money to operate and start monitoring programs in three lakes. We've been in the media, we've grown our international and national stakeholders network strongly. We've done 9 international seminars in which Devin have participated, in which Joanne participated in last year's. And we've got partners like the US Embassy, local NGOs, local aquaculture, real estate development, sanitary companies. And we've been able to engage decision makers, both public and private partners, in this journey, which is very long term, but we're very encouraged to keep on going, and we expect to strengthen our relationship with Lake Tahoe. I was just coming out of a meeting with the mayor from Frutillar, Devin, and he was asking me about our partnership. So we've been looking at establishing a formal partnership between the city of South Lake Tahoe and the cities in Lake Llanquihue, which I think it's something that can strengthen even more the partnership in Northern Patagonia, Lake Tahoe. I think I'll maybe stop there, and if there are any questions, I try to go fast just to leave time to questions because I have.
Let's get through the rest of it, and then we can turn to questions.
Yes, okay. Please.
Go ahead. There's just some pictures of the modeling and monitoring work we're doing. We have 7 stations where we're measuring both temperature and dissolved oxygen in Lake Llanquihue. This information is feeding a hydrodynamic model that was developed by UC Davis. So we currently have a model that we can use for Lake Llanquihue. We now understand how contaminants move in different times of the year. And in a second stage, we are going to develop a watershed model in order to connect these two models and have this idea of how land use interacts with lake water quality. We hope to have that ready end of this year, beginning of next year. Go ahead. And just to finish, this is some of the, these were some of the examples of things we've done and the way we work. We work strongly with a communications agency and with an advertising agency. And we've been thinking in this 3 years, how can we do this cultural change? Besides the seminars, besides the workshops we do, how can we, in a massive way, impact people that want to change their behaviors in the lake? So we've done some creative campaigns. This is one, which is called Don't Become the Lake Monster, which is a social media campaign through Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, LinkedIn, where we define certain best practices or certain macro topics where we want to change the behavior of people, which are protection of wetlands and native species, water contamination, and waste and residues. So on those three topics, we developed some tips, some good practice tips of things to do and things not to do. And we've been moving that through our social media with this Don't Become the Lake Monster campaign. So this was launched during the summer, during our summer. It's going to stay live all through this year. And we are in the process of raising the funds to do a movie. We're going to have a Lake Monster movie, like a thriller type of Jaws type of movie. We have the director, we have the arts direction, we have the photography, and we expect to film the first trailer of that movie in Chile, and the second trailer will be filmed in Lake Tahoe in the near future. So that's some of the ways that we're trying to, in a fun way, in a creative way, impact the behavior of people and change people's minds on how they enjoy and how they use these lakes. So the challenge is massive, but we're very encouraged with this. We've been very happy working with Devin and the TRPA staff and Keep Tahoe Blue and UC Davis. I've had the chance to visit Tahoe, and it's an amazing place, and I am sure expect for our partnership to keep on happening in time. Many thanks.
Thank you, Fernando. I want to bring us home here and just highlight most recently in February of this year, myself and Jeffrey Schladau with UC Davis were able to visit Chile on another delegation visit that was funded by the U.S. Embassy. And I just wanted to share some photos from that visit that'll really show you those shared challenges on the ground and where we can learn from each other. We visited in February, which is high summer season, 4th of July season for the lakes of Northern Patagonia. And as you can see there, there is traffic and parking and litter issues and crowding on the beach, many of the same things that we have here. As you saw with Nano and his campaign around being a lake monster, we also up here have the Take Care campaign and really using those bright, colorful messages to spread the need. You can see that trash can that is trash piled all over. It says that they are a clean city. So definitely some improvements that can be made there. Just like Tahoe, traffic, honestly, down there is probably worse during the high summer season. You can see in that top left corner, the light stream of headlights from the cars that stretches for miles past the lake. I think one thing that we can really learn from Chile is their public transportation and their bus system. You can get a bus pretty much anytime, anywhere across the country, and it really does help interconnect that country and reduce vehicle trips and plane flights. They're also dealing with shoreline development. We were lucky enough to take a helicopter tour of some of the lakes, and you can see a lot of that development butts right up, especially those big hotels, butts right up to the shoreline, and this is something they have challenges with. But they also have great public access to their lakes in the region. You can see the bottom left corner, that little line of grass that goes on the beach. To the left of that, that's public. To the right of that, that is private. So there's definitely an emphasis on public access to the lakes in the region. And they're dealing with stormwater, not only stormwater, but sewage. A lot of what we dealt with in the past, when it rains, the stormwater with all of those pollutants goes into the lake. It also gets into the sewer system, which causes overflows and sewage going directly into the lake, one of the main things that Chile Lagos Limpios is working on. And the bottom left there, you can see a bunch of folks swimming in the lake in front of a sign that says it's not meant for swimming. So that's definitely something that's a challenge down there that they're trying to work on. Very similar to Tahoe as well, as Fernando said, at Lake Llanquihue, there's four main jurisdictions. So it's very much like our mismatch of jurisdictional boundaries in the Tahoe region. And it takes that collaboration across those jurisdictions to get things done. And that is one of the big messages we bring from Tahoe to this region. And each one of these municipal mayors do meet regularly in a jurisdictional partnership in order to address their shared challenges. And then again, I just want to give a big shout out to the U.S. Embassy, who is celebrating 200 years of partnership with Chile. And without them, none of these visits and seminars would be possible. The highlight of our February trip was a public seminar at this wonderful theater that's right on the lake on a pier, where UC Davis brought their science and their initial results of their lake modeling to the public. And there was a robust discussion about this. And that was amplified publicly as the front page of the papers. And just a little funny anecdote about communicating science. When UC Davis did all the modeling, obviously everything's theoretical. That theoretical piece got missed in the translation. So everyone thought that UC Davis had released all these pollutants into the lake. And I know Fernando spent a few days dealing with the backlash of that, but it really did show that people do care about the lake and what happens there. And it really raised the profile of the organization and the importance, as Fernando said, of science driving decisions. It's also really important to know that, yes, we have modeling at Lake Tahoe, and we've had this whole long history of Charles Goldberg starting UC Davis's Environmental Research Center, but it helps to monitor more than one lake. If we know what climate change and environmental factors are doing in more lakes around the world, it can better inform the models for Tahoe and the actions that we take at Tahoe. So while Chile is learning a lot from us, we are also learning a lot from them. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Chair, for any questions.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Devin. Thank you so much. And Fernando, thank you so much for being with us this morning. And I apologize for missing you last month. I was really looking forward to it. And you've really brought a wonderful story to us today. It's a story that we are very happy to be a part of and that we'd like to continue to be a part of. Do we have questions and comments from the board members? Ashley, please.
Thanks. And let me know if you have any issues with my audio. I'm at Wilder right now. I just wanted to say thank you for this presentation. It was really great. And it's really excellent to hear how this bilateral coordination is really improving science and outcomes and community engagement in both places. And, you know, I remember learning about the Tahoe Baikal Institute years ago, and it seems like that this expanded capacity to learn from others and other lakes is really helping TRPA and folks living in the basin. So I just want to say thank you. Great presentation. And I look forward to learning more.
Thank you, Ashley. Appreciate it. John.
Yes, thanks, Devin and Fernando. And my question, I took note of the public access. Is that a true for all lakes in northern Patagonia? And is that at the high water mark? And is it all around every lake?
Yeah, in Chile, both in the ocean and in the freshwater, 8 meters above the most high water, high tide level, until 8 meters, that's public. And from then onwards can be private if it's owned by someone or if it's owned by the state, all right? But there's no law that makes every private owner to provide access. So that's become a huge issue both in beach, in freshwater, and in saltwater. Because there are some, you know, there are some massive portions of a lake which are only accessible by water because the private access, there's no private access and land is owned by, I don't know, a farmer or whoever. So that's become a problem, and that's set up the discussion on, okay, lakes, the water of the lake, it's a public good. It's administrated by the Navy, and we should all be able to use it and enjoy it. But what about access? Access is not public. Many accesses are only private. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's one of the hot topics at the moment.
Yes, it does. So you can access it laterally or from a boat, but it's just getting through a private property is the issue that you're working through.
Yes.
Thank you, John. Really appreciate it. Shelley, please.
Thank you. Fernando, I was interested in knowing how many irrigated acres there are adjacent to these lakes. I mean, in the past, we had cattle grazing in the Tahoe Basin and the associated impacts to water clarity. Seems to me, it appears from the photos that you have quite a few acres of irrigated land. That's one question. The other question is there an effort underway to incentivize the relocation of these agricultural operations away from the shoreline of these lakes?
I don't have the number, the exact number of how many irrigated prairies there are. I think recently you are getting more irrigation because, you know, historically it was much, it's become much more drier in the south of Chile. Climate change has been, we've been seeing the effects. So, you know, some agriculture farms are irrigating now. And the answer to the second question is no, actually no. I mean, there's farms that you see that, you know, cows are grazing all the way to, actually. I mean, there's no problem with that currently. So there's no, at an industry level, effort to start moving away agriculture farms or, you know, feedlots or dairy farms away from the lakes. We're trying, one of our the things that we want to do is start working with dairy farms and the Dairy Farms Association to start working on standards in their production facilities. So more than move your cows from this side, maybe, you know, separate the maybe establish certain areas where they should graze and where not. What are the ratios of nitrogen and phosphorus that you should apply to the prairies in order to get, you know, the productivity you want, but for it to not damage the health of the lake. But yeah, no, there's no effort. I mean, agriculture is a big economic activity in Chile. It's a big economic activity in the south of Chile, and these lakes have dealt historically with agriculture, and they're very proud of it.
Okay. Tough problem. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, I'm looking for hands in the room or hands on the computer. And I don't see any. I'm curious as to when you might take the next trip down. Is there a planned trip back down to Chile?
I'm always thinking of returning to Chile. I think it's also important for the Chileans to come to Tahoe. We recently submitted another grant to the U.S. Embassy with a climate focus that includes both a Chilean delegation trip to Tahoe and a Tahoe delegation trip to Chile. So we can draw names out of a hat among board members to see who can come with us on that trip.
Well, I mean, I would like to just do it myself anyway. So if we could be apprised of the dates, I think my family would like to go see Chile and Chile, and I'd like to see the 28 lakes and lagoons. What a beautiful place, and its lore here in the United States, just so you know, much like I think Tahoe is in other countries. But when you think of Patagonia, you just think of absolute beauty and natural resources and something that's extraordinary, worthy of protection. So thank you for all of your hard work. Thank you for taking the time to present to us. And Devin, what a fantastic project you got involved in here. And thank you for serving on the board down there. And Jeff does wonderful work, and can't thank all of you enough for all the effort with respect to climate change and keeping our natural resources clean.
Yeah, big thanks to Devin. I mean, Devin has been one of the driving forces of this partnership, and he's, you know, put the effort and the hours to maintain this, you know, alive. And he, besides participating in the board meetings, he's, you know, written some of our grant proposals to the U.S. Embassy. He's done the political work, so, and he's very committed to Chile, and he's a very good friend. So, you know, big thank you to Devin.
Well, thank you, Fernando. Really appreciate you.
Okay.
Hey. Thank
you. I have to leave, guys. Have a good evening.
Yeah, we're gonna take public comment, and so
I'll stick around.
Yeah, would you stick around for just a moment? Okay, Catherine, would you please take us for public comment?
If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen, or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on to address the board. Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you so much. That item was informational only, and it's looking like it's 12:45. We've been going at it with several committees and the governing board today, and we are providing lunch today for the board members who are here. I would like to take time just kind of as a prelude to the entire idea of the retreat and connecting and spending time with one another to take a break, and to take a break that's long enough so that we can enjoy lunch and so that we can reacquaint and make sure that we connect in anticipation of what I think will be a really positive retreat tomorrow. So let's take a break. Joanne, are we taking a 1 hour break for lunch, or what are we doing?
It's up to the board, you know, take 45 minutes.
Okay, let's start with 45.
Yeah.
All right, and if people are still hungry, we might go another 5 or 10. Thank you so much. Okay, that brings us to agenda item 8A, Shoreline Code language regarding sections 84.3.3.E.3, a lot of threes in there, and 2.2.2.F.2, a lot of twos, the authorization of existing buoy fields and administrative approval for new mooring buoys on eligible private single-family littoral parcels. Information on this item can be found on page 231. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the Zoom webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. And at this point in time, I'm going to look up at the screen and see if Jacob is there. Yes, he's there. Jacob Stock, the floor is yours. Thank you for being here to present.
Hi there. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, governing board members. My name is Jacob Stock. I am a senior long-range planner with TRPA. This is my first time presenting before the full board, but I'm sure it will be the first of many times. So looking forward to it. So today, as noted, I'll be giving a brief presentation on proposed amendments to chapters 84 and 2 of the Code of Ordinances, and these are related to the authorization and approval of mooring buoys. And following my presentation, I'll seek comment from the board and the public. And finally, I'll ask the board to consider an ordinance to adopt the proposed amendment. So there is action at the end of this item if the board chooses. Next slide, please. So a little bit of background on these chapters and sections. The governing board adopted the shoreline plan in 2018. The plan is intended to support boating, paddling, swimming, and other water-based recreation, while also ensuring effective natural resource management and achievement of the Tahoe region's environmental goals. Also in 2018, regulations were added to the Code of Ordinances, which were intended to implement the shoreline plan. And now, as with any new plan, after being effective for a few years, TRPA staff identified the need for some minor adjustments to the implementing regulations of the shoreline plan. And there's a history of these of minor amendments like this to improve implementation. You may remember, for example, I believe it was December 2019, the board authorized public buoy fields as part of a minor amendment to the Code of Ordinances. So you may recall that. Similarly, staff is now recommending additional amendments to the Code of Ordinances to deal with the authorization and approval of mooring buoys. And on January 2022, the Shoreline Steering Committee recommended approval of these proposed amendments. RPIC unanimously recommended adoption last month, and APC recommended adoption earlier this month with all yes votes and one abstention. There were no comments from the public at either of these hearings. Staff, however, did receive a letter of support from the Tahoe Lakefront Owners Association just ahead of this hearing. So, in addition, I'll be speaking later in the presentation about comments from APC members. So those will be addressed in this presentation in a little bit. Next slide, please. So these amendments are really technical in nature. They won't change the agency's approach to regulating the impacts of mooring buoys and shoreline structures, however. So they're really technical, but not substantive with regards to how we regulate these structures. The initial environmental checklist is included in attachment C of your packet, and it shows that the amendments are not anticipated to have any significant effect on the environment. The proposed amendment to Chapter 84 just briefly recognizes the need to establish existing buoy fields. Like I said previously, an amendment in 2019 created a path for existing public buoy fields, and this amendment creates the same path for buoy fields not associated with lake-fronting parcels to prove up. And the technical term for that is our non-littoral HOA buoy fields, and I'll get more into that later. The proposed amendment to Chapter 2 allows for staff-level permitting of new single-use mooring buoys. So these buoys currently require hearings officer review and approval. However, staff believe that a public hearing is unnecessary for private buoys, and this is shown to place a significant burden on the hearings officer. So we're recommending that these private buoy applications be processed at the staff level. And I'll go into greater detail on the background and intent of these amendments in the following slides. Next slide, please. Okay, so starting with Chapter 84, the 2018 Shoreline Plan prohibited new buoy fields on Lake Tahoe. However, the code does provide a path for authorizing existing buoy fields associated with lake fronting, or as we call them, littoral parcels. This path was not provided, however, for buoy fields associated with properties that do not have lake frontage, so that these non-littoral associated buoy fields. And to date, staff have received 7 applications to authorize buoy fields on the lake owned by homeowners associations without lake frontage. So they are out there, and we have received applications for them. However, all of these, it should be noted that all of these applications are in the state of California. There are none in Nevada that we know of. So these applications demonstrate that it's necessary to create a path for HOAs without lake frontage to prove up and authorize their buoy fields. And this amendment is intended to create that path, which will be the same for non-littoral HOA buoy fields as it is for littoral HOA buoy fields. So the HOAs will be asked to provide a valid permit from a federal or state agency issued prior to the adoption of the Shoreline Plan in 2018. And that date is September 1st, 2018, that they must have a valid permit issued before that date. Next slide, please. Okay, so I want to give you a little bit of a sense of what a non-littoral HOA buoy field is versus a littoral HOA buoy field. So I've included some examples here. This first example is meant to illustrate what a littoral HOA buoy field is. So this first image you see here is the buoy field owned by the Dollar Point HOA, and that's the all the blue dots there circled in orange. You can also see the highlighted parcels above to the north on the lakeshore. These are the Dollar Point Tennis and Beach Club parcels. It's actually two parcels. It just looks like one here. These are lakefronting properties owned by the Dollar Point HOA. So this buoy field is associated with the littoral HOA, and it's considered a littoral HOA buoy field, and the code currently provides a path for buoy fields such as this one to be authorized. Next slide, please. Okay, now here's an example of a non-littoral HOA buoy field. Again, you see the blue dot circled, that's the buoy field. This is the Lake Forest Pier Owners Association, by the way. But in this case, there's no highlighted parcel. That's because this Pier Owners Association does not have a lakefronting parcel. But it does have a buoy field, and they have provided us with a valid state permit from California State Lands. So they have the authorization to have these buoys in the field without TRPA authorization. And this amendment is intended to remedy this and allow them a path to authorize their buoy field along with others. But, you know, this being an example. Next slide. Okay, so I want to address a few comments and additional code language before we move on. So still related to the Chapter 84 amendments. During the APC hearing, the commission member from the Nevada Department of State Lands expressed some concern that authorizing non-littoral HOA buoy fields might limit a littoral property owner's ability to place buoys lakeward of their property. And so I want to clarify here for the record that if development standards are met, the code authorizes new private buoys regardless of pre-existing buoys. So put simply, the authorizing these existing buoy fields does not directly limit littoral parcel owners' ability to place private buoys. Concerning the second bullet here on the slide, the original amendment language that we brought to APC and RPIC implied that non-littoral HOA buoy fields could not expand beyond what was authorized, but it never stated this explicitly. And so staff believed that it was necessary to state it more explicitly in the code language. And so we added that to the language in Exhibit 1 of your packet. And I can address that more later if you'd like. Next slide, please. Okay, so moving on to our second amendment here, so to the amendment to Chapter 2, the code requires hearings officer and board approval for all structures in the shore zone. So through implementation, staff have found that all structures include private mooring buoys, and these buoys are relatively routine approvals, and because of this, the hearings officer, the TRPA hearings officer, has really been bogged down by the volume of private buoy applications that have gone before them. This was an unintended consequence of the 2018 code language that staff believes needs to be remedied. And TRPA staff have in-house expertise in buoy regulations, so we believe that these permits would be appropriate for staff-level review and approval. For example, staff already review and approve existing mooring buoys, and the process for new private mooring buoys is really essentially no different. So we believe that staff have the expertise to do this. And actually, Matt Miller, who is our in-house expertise on buoy regulation, is here today if you have real technical questions about buoy regulation. Next slide, please. So the proposed amendment to section 2.2.2 will allow for staff level review and approval of private mooring buoys. The same current planning staff who make recommendations to the hearings officer and review authorization of existing buoys would now process permits for new buoys themselves. Like I said before, these staff members are experts in buoy regulation, and it's important to note that the amendment does not change the conformance requirements for mooring buoys, and it does not impact any other structures in the shore zone like piers. It will still be the same review process for piers and other structures. And still, as well, the amendment reserves the option for an applicant to appeal any permit decision to the governing board. So next slide, please. I believe that concludes my presentation. Yes, I am available to answer any questions. Like I said, the implementing language is in Exhibit 1 of your packet, and I'll hand it back to the chair.
Great. Thank you very much, Jacob. Really appreciate the presentation. Yes, please, Barbara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many buoys are you allowing in California? I've got kind of a mixed bag of what I got for Nevada, but is that for both that you gave me, John?
Yes, it's for both. But remember, this amendment is only for existing buoys.
No, I understand that. I need to know how many total California is allowed to have. That's what I was asking about Nevada.
So for the total number of buoys, I'll have to get you that figure because it's what's out there existing, which is, you know, usually we number this in moorings, but I think it's around 1,400 new moorings, and those are distributed around the lake. So there will be new moorings on the Nevada side, but this, because there aren't any non-littoral existing buoy fields in Nevada that we're aware of, we don't think this will have an impact in Nevada. Does that get us any closer?
You know how I feel about buoys.
Yes,
so.
I know how you feel about buoys.
But I just wanted to know how many there were still more to come or more applications that can be had. I'm really concerned about this because I think it looks terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen the hotels, the restaurants that have these out there, and I just don't agree with it. I think it is taken away from the look of Lake Tahoe. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, just a second, John. I'm going to go to Shelley. She had her hand up. Shelley, please.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Jacob. Quick question. I know that I appreciate the clarification about the ability of a littoral property owner who may own a piece of property that is where a buoy field that is controlled by a non-littoral property owner is off of his or her littoral parcel. The question is, what do we have in our rules and regulations with respect to where that person's buoy would need to be placed? Would it need to be integrated into the association of the HOA buoy field, which is off of their property? Or would that just be handled on a case-by-case basis with respect to placement?
I can speak a little bit about the placement, and I think if Matt Miller has anything to add, he's the real expert in this. With respect to the area requirements for buoy placement, the buoy would need to be placed 50 feet from an existing buoy, a new private buoy would be. So if there's an existing buoy from a buoy field within the projection lines of that parcel, then the new private buoy would have to be 50 feet away from one of those buoys. And it also needs to be 20 feet set back from the projection lines of the property going into the lake. So there are the distance requirements, and I don't know if Matt has anything to add to that.
For the record, my name is Matt Miller, Senior Environmental Specialist at TRPA, working the shoreline implementation. And Jacob, you did cover it pretty well there. There are additional criteria for how far out buoys can be. But to answer the question more directly, Shelley, the buoy does not have to be in line with the field. They could place it in the space that's available as long as it meets those 50 foot setbacks and the setbacks from the parcel line projections. It is worth noting that this area in front of the property beyond low water does not belong to the property owner. It belongs to the state of California and the state of Nevada. The placement of the buoys would have to conform with what they have already permitted, which would be those existing buoy fields. So it would have to work around those, but they're in most cases that's very easy to do.
You know, thank you, Matt. I remember conversations we had in the past about trying to consolidate these fields, and rather than having an outlier, and it may not be based on, these restrictions in terms of setbacks, maximum depth, it might be a challenge. But of course, theoretically, that littoral property owner must have given that association authorization to locate that buoy lakeward of their property. So I'm anticipating it might be an issue in the future, but I appreciate the fact that you provided that as an option. The other question I had, I think, is probably for Jacob. The new language on page 241, I'd like to suggest a slight change that is perhaps consistent with what was proposed originally in the staff report. But the last line read, buoy fields associated with a non-littoral homeowners association may not expand beyond what was previously approved, rather than stating previously permitted amount. I mean, amount can mean a variety of things, number of buoys. It can mean the area encompassed by the field. But I think it's cleaner if we just use language consistent with what was in the staff report. That's just a recommendation. I don't know, John, if you have a comment.
No, that's fine, Shelley.
Okay.
I've noted that. Thank you, Shelley.
You bet. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you so much. John, please.
Thank you, Jacob. You're off to a good start. And Matt, thanks for being here too. So looking at the shoreline implementation program, I know that, John, you mentioned additional moorings, at least as a couple of years ago, was 2,116 additional moorings after determining the status of existing moorings. So presumably there's a total cap anticipated in the shoreline plan. And so I guess the question is, how were these accounted for when the additional mooring were allocated? And because these weren't accounted for in the past, will the total, including the new mooring applications, exceed what was anticipated in the shoreline plan environmental documents?
I can handle this one, but you guys can follow up. The answer is they're part of the existing count. So they're already accounted for in the disclosure, particularly the environmental document, as to what's existing out there. So they go in that pool, and they're already allocated to part of those existing numbers that we were aware of, but we didn't have a route to provide authorization for them. So that's what this corrects.
So it doesn't change the total number out there. These were counted as in terms of the new allocation baseline, but they weren't officially permitted. I mean, were they assumed Correct. To be connected to a littoral parcel? Or I'm just wondering where we're doing this cleanup, but they weren't. They were counted, but yet they weren't officially recognized. Or
They were part of the original baseline count. That count didn't necessarily finally divide where all those buoys belong to. So we didn't do that. We're going to do that, as you can see what's happening, through the permitting process. So HOA comes in. If they're littoral, they come in and make certain they have a TRPA permit if they don't already. Then there's these six or seven or so fields that we've discovered that are non-littoral, that right now they don't have a way to gain a TRPA permit, even though they have a state lands permit. And so that's what this amendment is about. So we didn't really, go through that exercise, John, back in 2018 to definitively assign all existing buoys to one category or another. We counted them all, but we didn't do that determination whether, you know, these buoys were assigned to a littoral field or a non-littoral field.
Right. Well, just a real quick follow-up. Then the bit about only authorize new moorings after determining the status of existing moorings, weren't the 2116 for the next 20 years established before these were determined? Or I guess you're just saying they were assumed to be legal under some definition.
No, we assume that there's going to be some that are legal and some that are not going to be able to prove up. So it's that'll be number will be fixed when we go through, we finally get through the permitting process, and then we have to go through the enforcement process of getting the remaining illegal buoys off the lake. But at the same time, we're authorizing new buoys that'll have the TRPA permit and appropriate stickers and licenses. So that's, if I'm hopefully answering that question. Okay. Matt, did you want to add to that? Okay.
John.
Thanks, John. And thanks, John. Appreciate both of you. 1 second, Barbara. Just give me 1 second. Vince, please.
I just wanted to say that I appreciate this legislation or this amendment because, I do belong to an HOA for full disclosure that has a non-littoral buoy field. We have never used a buoy there, but we do belong to that. But I think that the thing for me that I like about this is that it allows more people greater access to the lake instead of just the people who live on the lake. The people in our HOA who have had these buoys for a long time, for generations, don't live on the lake. They don't have those resources, but they have greater access to the lake as a result of having a mooring on the lake. So I know that these associations are pretty common around the West Shore. I'm not sure which ones will be affected by this, but I know there are, a lot of properties inland that benefit from having these. So I think it's a great thing to give slightly improved access to the lake, which someone from California, I'm always conscious of the statewide goals of giving more access to these resources, beaches and lakefronts. So I think it's a good set of amendments. Thanks.
Thank you, Vince. Appreciate it. Barbara, you had a follow-up.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I just wanted to verify that this doesn't add any more, or it is adding more buoys.
It's not adding more buoys to what's existing on the lake now.
So what we voted on several times ago, that number still exists.
Correct.
And we are not adding any more.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Last call for questions, comments on this item. Yes. Oh, please, Jim. Sorry.
Yeah, I did really just a comment. And I know, first it was heard at RPIC and it passed through RPIC and I heard it there. And then I know the questions came up at APC, of which I had our Nevada Division of State Lands folks give me a call with some questions. And I just want to say that I really appreciate you, John, and staff for working with our Nevada Division of State Lands, clarifying the questions that they had. I know that I spoke with them again last night, and they're comfortable with these amendments. Largely the non-littoral issue largely is a California issue, but certainly we are concerned about, how this might have impacts on the Nevada side. We're comfortable. This is within the cap. This isn't adding any development potential. And it's just really, things were just spinning and spinning and spinning and grinding away for so many years as we tried to get a shoreline plan up here at Tahoe. And this is really just trying to get everything cleaned up and permitted. And so I'm very supportive of these amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Okay, I don't see anybody else. Oh, Barbara.
Thank you. Sorry to be a pest, but I'm looking at something on the screen here, and it says over 20-year life of the shoreline plan, up to 2,116 additional moorings could be distributed to the following pools. So that sounds like you're adding more. That's what I'm trying to clarify. So that'll be based on how I vote.
Yes, let's distinguish between two things. The existing program, the program you just talked about, which does that the board voted for, does allow new buoys added to the total number of existing buoys on the lake. Right? This amendment does not address any of those new buoys added to the lake. This amendment only addresses existing buoys that happen to be owned and controlled by non-littoral as opposed to littoral HOAs.
Well, then do they need to change the wording? Because it says additional.
Right. There will be additional buoys on the lake. Now that word, the number that you just read is additional mooring, so that accounts for piers, boat lifts, slips, and buoys. But just to clarify, so there will be additional buoys on the lake. That was approved by the governing board as part of this package. This amendment, again, is just for those buoys that have been in existence, that have a state lands lease or permit, that now they'll also be able to get a TRPA permit. I'm sorry if I'm not answering.
So today's action, what you're suggesting is today's action. I'm going to just take a stab to clarify. Today's action isn't increasing anything. It was the previous action that validated the shore zone work and the.
Correct. That set those additional those additional buoys into the various pools, which are marinas, expansions of existing littoral buoy fields, and additional new buoys for individual, private, single parcel moorings.
If I might, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
So this group could, again, if somebody comes to them and says, we want another 2,000, could approve another 2,000 buoys or piers, whatever moorings that you're talking about at any time. Is that correct?
If the board could make all the findings, including all the environmental findings about scenic quality, water quality, et cetera, then yes, this board has discretion, that discretion to allow more buoys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, looking one last. Oh, yes, please, John.
So just to put a fine point on it. the 2,116 additional was based on a total build out of, I'm not sure what the number is. And I'm just trying to figure out if if these non-littoral ones were not approved, would that require them to be removed, or would there be more headroom for additional new ones? Or, and just trying to make sure that the new ones that are permitted, which seem to be based on what's existing, is not affected by this decision, I guess, one way or another, right? That you're just, again, that they were accounted for as what's existing, and then going through the permitting process, if we were to say they can't be permitted because they were not littoral, and they're, you know, would that affect the future new ones, or is there zero relationship between these two actions?
I'm going to defer in part to Matt. So I don't know if Matt's going to magically appear back on the screen and save my butt. Oh, he's there. There is some relationship to the number of existing when we go through the process of first permitting everything that can be permitted and then removing all the illegal buoys that have not come into compliance, that there, I believe there is some additional headroom associated for new buoys. But I want to, Matt, is that, did I get that right?
Yeah, the number of existing buoys identified in the EIS is about 4,200. And to date, we've had quite a few less than that permitted and registered with TRPA. But there's still permits that we're working through and applications that we're working through. The number for additional moorings is completely separate from that 4,200. So it's that 2,000, and John, you were looking for it before, it's 2,116 additional moorings that are allowed and were previously under the code that was previously adopted by the board. So those are two separate, the existing amount and what was identified under the EIS and the amount new, while related, they're not based off of each other.
Okay. Let me just correct my answer then, John. There's no relationship. So it doesn't matter the cap on new buoys, new moorings, or in our world, additional moorings, is set at that 21,260, whatever it is.
No? John, may I just make it, and that's fine, but can I just make one point?
Yeah.
Would it be fair to say that the buoys that we're talking about today are in existence in the eyes of other agencies? We are just changing our rules to make it possible for TRPA to also approve them.
Correct. Okay. Correct. But I think John's asking another related question, which is if there's not a path to approve these and they have to be removed, does that mean we're freeing up more space for additional buoys? Was that your question?
Or conversely, if the 2116 was based on the idea that these were not permitted and, you know, you gave it, more were given out than would have been otherwise given out.
No, these particular buoys that we're talking about today, the buoys and buoy fields were counted. And so that was part of what was presumed to be in existence and the vast majority being subject to permitting.
There was just a little wrinkle in our rules that didn't allow the non-littoral to get to those buoys, and now we're fixing
that. The existing non-littoral buoy fields.
Correct.
To come into compliance with our rules. Process. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Anything else? Did we have any other questions based on all of that? I don't see any. So at this point in time, I think we're going to public comment. Catherine, can you take us to public comment?
If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person, in Zoom by clicking the hand icon, or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on to address the governing board. Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, very good. So we will deem public comment closed. We'll bring it back to the board. Anything else in the interim? I don't see any. And I would request that someone propose a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to do that. I move to approve the required findings as described in Attachment B, including a finding of no significant effect for the adoption of the Code of Ordinances amendments as described in the staff summary.
We have a motion. Mario, would you please take us through the roll?
Ms. Saldine?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad-Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Do I have to vote? I don't like this at all. I don't like it. But I'll vote yes just because I did the last time. So I don't like it.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Yates? And Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you. Do we have a second motion?
Yes, I further move to adopt Ordinance 2022-, amending Ordinance 87-9 to amend the Code of Ordinances as shown in Exhibit 1 of Attachment A as amended on the record.
Thank you, Shelley. We have a motion. Mario, would you please take us through the roll?
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Ms. Aldine?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates? And Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Okay, very good. Thank you, everybody, for that. Thank you, Jacob. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, moving to agenda item number 9. And this is, there's three items, actually, with respect to number 9 on reports with the executive director report. We're gonna go through each of the three items separately. What I'd like to do is I'd like to just give you a little bit of background on each, kind of lay out each one of these items. And then we're going to have a discussion about each one of the items. But first, let me just do a little summary for item number 1 and hand it over to Joanne for the executive director report. We've recently received some unfortunate news in the Tahoe Basin. Our extraordinary leader and the face of TRPA for the last 13 years is stepping down. Joanne Marchetta has served TRPA and Lake Tahoe brilliantly, tirelessly, and strategically. And I've had the honor for 10 years of serving with her. I've served on many corporate boards, nonprofits, government boards, and I can honestly say that I've never worked with such a talented and committed leader in an organization. For the next several minutes, Joanne is going to talk to us a little bit about her decision and her situation. And then we will have an opportunity to talk about retaining her expertise during the transition to the new executive director. So, Joanne, please.
Thank you, Mark. And thank you, everybody. An emotional day for me. It's actually good to see all of you in person. And I heard someone call this, you know, coming out of COVID and actually meeting in person, like the great awkward, like we forgot how to like be with one another. So it's a great awkward for so many reasons. I have spoken with each of you and all of you about my hearing impairment and its realities. It is a hugely daunting life experience to lose one of your 5 senses entirely. And the good news for me was it was replaced imperfectly, but it was miraculously replaced by modern electronics. So you all know I can still function, and I can function quite effectively. But there are day-to-day realities of this that I have to contend with. Navigating different hearing environments, listening environments that come with the responsibilities of the full-time job. You have no idea, you know, some people have great audio, some people stinks. Big rooms, small rooms. Anyway, it leaves me spent and too physically fatigued to do this job 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 24/7, 7 days a week, which is about what it is. And that reality led me to the decision to step down. I'm proposing effective close of business June 30th. And so I'm doing what I have to do to contend with a physical disability. While it's a loss to me, I really want you to see this in a larger perspective. I've had a long, positive, productive tenure, and I'm handing off to you a healthy and robust organization and staff. I was listening to Bud this morning. When I stepped in as ED, at best, it was uncertain and unstable. We're coming off of Vangor. It was the Great Recession, deep divides, really deep budget cuts. And today, by contrast, we're financially healthy. We're clear, capable on our core purpose, on our priorities. We have a really excellent and passionate and committed staff. We have an extraordinarily positive and supported organizational culture. We've become a preferred, who would think of this, Wes? We have a preferred place to work, you know. We're literally a designated employer of choice in this region. And all of those strengths have racked up record accomplishments over a decade. And so internally, you know, I feel like I know I've provided the agency some stability and continuity and consistency. I was looking back at it, 9 board leadership changes. You know, I've led TRPA as the backbone of a partnership that we shifted the culture here basin-wide. We were the agency to hate. And today we're seen as a coherent, cohesive, supportive multi-sector partnership. And you know this, I have made partnership collaboration epic. Collaboration, our mantra. It's the secret sauce of our success. And so there are literally national practitioners, networks in large landscape conservation that I've been heavily engaged with. They view Tahoe as a national class successful cross-sector partnership. They look to us for how to collaborate well. That's something I'm handing this foundation off to all of you to continue that good progress. And that legacy is now yours. And my decision is especially melancholy because I'm leaving for a physical impairment, but honestly, regardless of that, now is absolutely the right time. I've accomplished all that I need to. And now it's time for all of you to come together and give it your best. I've served TRPA for 17 years, first as general counsel for 4 years, then as executive director for over 13 years. That's a quarter. That executive director run was a quarter of TRPA's history. It was 8 years longer than any past indeed. But for my hearing impairment, I may not have headed to retirement this early, but I am, and so as a transition into that permanent retirement, I have proposed this emeritus status with TRPA. It would be a very limited role where I want to focus on working with HR and with the interim and possibly the new executive director exclusively on skill development of interested staff. Linda and I were talking about this in the hallway. She's doing this with the state of California. I'm proposing to do it here. I'll convert to part-time in a new role. I'll draw on my 40 years of work experience. I'll draw on the lessons of partnership over two decades, and I'll draw on my work with these state and national landscape collaboratives to help teach the special skill sets that come with collaborative leadership. And we can have a deeper conversation about how I got interested in that. But it's really because the work that we do here at TRPA, it's beyond the ordinary. It takes these really special competencies to work in the kinds, to build the kinds of partnerships that we build, to build the trusting relationships and to work in the kind of teamwork that's needed here for success. And none of what you're going to need is going to be accomplished without good staff. And I'm at a point in my career, thankfully, at this point, where I can give a bit of focus on that core skill development to the people who are sacrificing themselves every day here for Tahoe. And so this is effectively a different kind of accommodation for my hearing impairment. I've proposed to the chair and the vice chair, and actually each of you in individual conversations, to move to this transition role as I wind down to my full retirement. It can be called many things. I called it emeritus. You can call it something else if you're more comfortable with that. It'd be effective start of the new fiscal year. As you think about the interim executive director, you have both John Hester and Julie Reagan. Both are extraordinary and well prepared. Either can step in as an interim executive director while you search for a successor. And I, for my part, I'll accept a significantly reduced salary with benefits. And as I said, I would focus exclusively on staff's collaborative leadership development for those who are interested. And I'll say this, for those of you who might imagine that this is my chance to run the agency from back of house, I can only assure you I'm finished with that. I'm really finished with that. And as proof of concept, I've talked here with folks in the event that some newly selected executive director is unwilling or unable to work, you know, with me in this limited role, I'll just simply terminate my employment fully. And that'll be subject to an agreed upon set of closeout terms with the agency. I have been so deeply honored and privileged to serve Tahoe and TRPA. So many boards, so many individual governing board members. And I'm just deeply proud of what we all accomplished together. And I hope for every one of you, you keep the momentum going. So I would greatly appreciate your support for the proposed transition. And I'll turn it back to you, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. And it's been an incredible honor to work with you. Thank you for laying that out. The fact that you've so appreciated this role in protecting such a beautiful lake, and that you've performed so wonderfully. What I'd like to do is I'd like to lay out a number of considerations, many of which you've mentioned, but so that they're a backdrop to this whole idea of this transition. The first would be, and these are considerations I just think all of us should consider and take to heart here. The first would be Joanne would have a change in role. She would focus on consulting with middle and upper management regarding collaboration and development leadership of staff. Two, she would answer to the new ED. Three, her position would be part-time, reduced hours, significantly reduced salary. Four, we would negotiate a package with Joanne where either the new ED or Joanne could decide that if it's not working, Joanne would just receive whatever terms of that package were and no longer serve the TRPA. Additionally, I have taken it upon myself, and actually, I believe Cindy was part of that, reviewed the financial considerations relating to the part-time position, and it appears that the net increase to the budget, with everything being taken into consideration on this transition, would not be significant. And Chris is going to be able to help us with that. I suggest that the board delegate the negotiations of the term of Joanne's position to me, to general counsel to assist me, and to Chris to assist in the financial pieces of that. And that next month, June, that general counsel Chris and I report back to operations with a proposal, and that proposal to operations and governance then be considered and decided for purposes of a recommendation to the governing board, so that operations and governance makes that independent determination as to what it thinks about the terms of the transition. And with those considerations that I'm proposing and laying out for you, I just turn it over to the board for purposes of discussion. Questions? Yes, Jim, please.
This is tough for me too, Joanne. So, I mean, what a long, strange trip it's been. I think the first time we worked together was, it's ironic that we're talking buoys today, because I think the first time we spoke, you were general counsel and I was running the Division of State Lands. And I don't know if it was Shoreline Beta version or Shoreline version 2.3 or whatever, but it was an old version that never made it across the finish line. But we had some issues on Nevada State Parks in particular, and we worked through those. And that was really my first experience working with you, Joanne. And I got a flavor of how you collaborate and how you try to achieve consensus. So, and that was small potatoes compared to what came next. When the Nevada legislature introduced SB 271 in 2011, that bill originally, this is why I am so grateful, basically had Nevada pull out of the compact and gave all the planning things to me at the Division of State Lands. And I was like, heck no, that's not good for the lake and I don't want to do it. When that bill was introduced, I think the prevailing wisdom was that was just another one of those bills that was just to make a point and would never get a committee hearing. More and more conversations I got dragged into behind the scenes, talking about the bill. It was real. It was very, very real. And I can't imagine a different executive director negotiating that minefield, being able to get that bill into a place to satisfy all of the parties to it still passed, but at least there was some milestones that if we achieved them, Nevada would stay in the compact. which was then the next part. All of those bi-state consultations to get that RPU past the finish line. I can go on and on. I am just so grateful. I moved here in 91 to work for this agency. And so I strongly believe that Lake Tahoe is better off having a regional planning agency. And I know how perilous it was. And I also know how perilous it can easily become. So with all of that, I just, one, thank you. I totally support the concept of a transition because I do think it's important. Just a couple of comments. And Joanne, you brought these up. I think the term emeritus just confused the public. I understand the intent, but I think it's a confusing term. So I would just, if we move forward in this path, I would just advise to maybe think about what it's called. I do like the idea, Mark, of sketching out and taking something to operations. I do think that's important. And again, Joanne, you mentioned it as well. I do know that there is some concern that it's maybe a back of the house move. I don't believe it is. But in that vein, I do think as part of the operations review, if that's the path we go, I think it's very, very important to spell out sort of the scope and the terms, reporting authorities, just all of those boring bureaucratic details that would really be essential to make this work, to really be very specific on what is the scope, what will Joanne be doing, who's she reporting to, have it go to an operations committee so there's a little bit of daylight. Those are my comments and that's my recommendation.
Thank you, Jim. Really appreciate it. Barbara, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Joanne, I want to thank you. I know I've only been a part of this group for almost 8 years, not quite, 6.5 months short of 8 years. But my husband and I bought a condo up here when our kids who are now in their 40s, were in elementary school and had it for 24 years. So I knew a lot about Lake Tahoe. I knew about the controversy. And Jim and I talked about, I remember the 2011 session. I remember the legislators that were fed up with Lake Tahoe and the whole shenanigans that was going on with that. But what I remember the most is that my husband and I first belonged to a group, and then we got away from it because we thought it was too radical. And then we came back because of you. And the reason we did was because you turned things around. You made this something that was respected. I mean, I just can't even tell you enough about how what your leadership has done for this recognition of the whole TRPA. And I do support the terms that you've laid out and the things that you've talked about and what Mark has said. I totally am there for you, and I'll support you on whatever it is you want and whatever Mark, whatever is decided. But I just want to thank you for the years that you've put in and what you've done to turn around TRPA, because it has made a difference. It's made a very, very big difference. And Tahoe will always be something that's in my heart, even though I don't have any property up here anymore. But I did, and we did enjoy it. We had a great time without buoys, I just have to say. I'm sorry, without buoys. But it is just really a pleasure, and I'm glad that you're going to be able to stay on in any capacity. I think that's really good, and I think that's great for us. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Barbara. Really appreciate it. Shelley, please.
I always told Joanne that I would follow her out the door. So I may be on the next person to be, tendering my resignation. But, Joanne is still with us. Yeah, I don't want this to sound like a eulogy. I mean, she's not leaving today. She's going to be with us even past her employment date, the end of her current employment date. But I wanted to share something. Excuse me. For those of you who have come to my office, you know that it's not real tidy. And that's because I learned long ago to save every piece of paper. because invariably, the minute you throw something away, somebody is knocking on your door asking for the information. So my office looks like the National Archives. And as a result of that, I found a memo that Alan Biagi had created. He was the chairman of the agency and the head of the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources when Joanne was selected to replace John Singlab. And in his memo to the board, he basically put together a search group consisting of himself, me, Mara Bresnik, who was serving at that time, Nancy McDermott, Steve Merrill, Norma Santiago, and Stuart Yaunt. And after our deliberations, we elected not to search even regionally for a new executive director. And the reason for that is summarized in his concluding paragraph. And it says, finally, the group recognized the tremendous asset the agency has in Ms. Marchetta and her character, leadership, knowledge, dedication, and ability to solve problems and achieve solutions. As TRPA's legal counsel, Ms. Marchetta has extensive knowledge of the inner workings of the agency, its goals and objectives, and the various environmental and economic interests inside and outside of the Lake Tahoe Basin. Ms. Marchetta recognizes the direction of TRPA that must take it to achieve its environmental objectives and to address Lake Tahoe's economic development and fiscal challenges. And so it was based on the group's recommendation that the board concurred, and that we had kind of a seamless transition between John Singlab and Joanne. And that is one of the best decisions that this agency has ever made. So I'll save any further comments for her official going away party at the end of June. But I think what's proposed here is a very elegant solution. And candidly, if we find an executive director who finds this arrangement too burdensome, I'm not sure I want to hire him or her. Joanne has a wealth of knowledge. She is the sort of person who is very sensitive to boundaries. She has so much invested in this agency, the last thing she would do would be to try to sabotage the success of the new executive director. So I am not the least bit concerned about that, regardless of what the public perception might be. So I think this is appropriate. However we describe her new status, I welcome her continued involvement with open arms. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. Really appreciate it. I'm going to go with Vince.
Excuse me, Joanne. I know we're all incredibly sad to see you go. I'm pretty new on this this board, but I've been in Tahoe for 25, almost 30 years now, and I know in the last number of years, TRPA has gone from a four-letter word to a four-letter acronym, and that's a pretty amazing transition in mindset. And I really wish you could be making this decision to retire based on what's best for you and your happiness instead of something you feel you have to do. I can't imagine how frustrating that is. I think, you know, I've been involved in a lot of transitions from nonprofit boards and corporate boards. And I think that this role could be really helpful, especially in this organization, which is such a complex creature with the bi-state and federal government involvement, the incredible amount of politics and the number of partners and players in the area. I think having you stay on to help through this transition, I think could be incredibly helpful. And so I'm excited about that opportunity. And for some of the other board members who are wondering about it, I had done some research and found some articles and studies that I shared with a few board members that I'm happy to share with the rest of you as well, if anyone else is interested. We have been instructed, Ashley and I, by the state of California, that they would like to have a seat at the table through this whole transition period from basically discussing this to helping pick the new executive director. And so they would like to see one of us on working towards this. And between Ashley and I, we discussed it and felt that I had more experience. So I guess what I'm saying is that the state would like me to be involved in helping through this process to keep up this bi-state arrangement where California and Nevada are both represented at the table. So I'm putting that out there to you guys and hope that I can add some value and some perspective and help make this a great transition for the organization and everyone. So thank you.
Thanks, Vince. Appreciate that. Let's see. Ashley, please. Ashley.
Great. Thanks. I just want what I said to Joanne on the phone was that I was disappointed to not be able to work with her for longer because, like, we've been on the board for a short period of time. And then I really appreciated her offer to stick around and offer support. As Vince said, I just wanted to chime in. First of all, everyone's comments have been great about how to manage this process. Just our confusion over the emeritus term. So if Vince could join Mark and Chris and John on just negotiating the terms of these next steps, I think that would be helpful just from California's interest too. I would just say, I think it would be really useful for someone coming in to be able to receive Joanne's guidance. The one thing I noted just in Mark's comments was potentially having the new executive director make the decision about whether Joanne stays or goes in that emeritus role. And I just would not want a new executive director to have to make that decision as a first decision. So I just want to echo that, that I think maybe we can, through Vince and Mark and that team, set that up. And then that way the new executive director is kind of free of that and doesn't feel like, you know, they're potentially angering the staff in a first decision. So those are my comments. And Joanne, thank you so much. Thanks for your leadership. And I hope I'll get a chance to interact with you more in the future.
Okay. Let's see. It's looking like Bill.
Thank you, Mark. I've heard about this for a few months. It is still, I agree with everybody, all that you've done for this agency. One thing I didn't really realize, Joanne, is how much power you have that on Highway 50, I hit every one of the lights perfectly. I did not have to stop. It was amazing. I kind of messed up my schedule and thought I'd do this virtually, but then I realized, oh my gosh, because Sue really got carried away on affordable housing and stuff that I had to get going. And so I hit the road and it was part of a field trip too, Bud, because I did see an awful lot of Caldor fire damage. I just think about when I came on this board. You know, Jim talks about a long history in this agency, but before I came on the board, I actually sued Joanne Marchetta when she was general counsel over a project in Northlake. And then Senate members and Senate staff, Byron Scher, who had served here through the regional plan update, left. So I got called up and said, would you be interested in doing this? And so I talked to Byron, and Byron had kind of a tough time, I think, through some of this difficulty that Jim described between Nevada and California, you know, over whether we're going to get a regional plan approved or not. And that was really, for me, the direction I got from my appointing authority is to try to break the tension. Let's not have it be one state telling one state as to how to do certain things. The advantage I had is that I had worked for a similar, though different, organization as their lobbyist in Sacramento, the California Coastal Commission, and fought really hard for the jurisdiction of that agency when it was basically sometimes thought by the legislature a little out of control. But it was that local coastal planning process that I kind of got why you did a regional plan the way you did it, really kind of embraced, you know, here's the opportunity, ground level, to start with this new updated regional plan. And I found all of my colleagues very receptive to let's roll up our sleeves and figure out how's the best way to do this. I remember driving to Carson City and meeting with Shelley. And when Shelley told me, oh, Bill, the lake's not going to turn green. And I kind of agreed with that. But, you know, we just kind of like, we'll work these things out. I remember my first meeting with Nancy McDermott, the one thing I recognized immediately was her wonderful West Texas accent. And I said, well, Nancy, I'm from Phillips, Texas. I was born in Phillips, Texas. And she said, oh, my gosh, Bill, you're smack dab in the middle of the panhandle. And I said, well, yeah, Nancy, only a person from West Texas would say smack dab, but would know where Phillips, Texas is. And then I went after we approved their area plan and had her squire me around Douglas County and talk about all the things that she thought about. And in that cooperative way, we did a lot of things that initially Shelley and Joanne and others told me, Bill, you just don't understand how difficult, for example, Shore Zone is. And now you do, Barbara, understand how difficult it is. You had John answer one question about how many buoys do you have there? But we did get that through. And you know what? We turned it over to a group of interested stakeholders, which Joanne put together and rode hard over. And they produced something that reached a consensus. And all of us, even those of us, maybe I'm kind of like Barbara, I'm not crazy about all the boats sometimes out in the lake, but there had to be a consensus reached on this particular issue. And we also had to retain our jurisdiction over the shore zone. And we did, and no one sued us. No one really did. And it took us to go through a lawsuit on the regional plan, unfortunately, but you know, what decisions you made were upheld. And then we've kind of modified the commodity program to make it development rights. So it's a little bit easier for a land use agency to figure out how to move, you know, what we used to call these tourist accommodation units to one side of the lake or the other, or who should make the trades. No, it was really our jurisdiction. We should be the ones that implement our plan and make sure it's being carried out. And we've done that in a really, really positive way, I think. So it's not surprising to me that when we, those of us that have worked with Joanne and really respect her, and, you know, Joanne and I didn't always get along on certain issues, but, you know, we had those wonderful meetings and arguments in her office, and she convinced me of the wisdom of her management style and thinking at times. But even she conceded on things like shore zone and other things, we ought to do that. And that maybe there's a better way to do some of these other things. But it was that kind of, you know, good relationship. And there's no question, you don't, when I was chair, it was just amazing the talents that we have on staff and the people we were working with. And boy, it sure made my job easy as we made the transition from here, all of us, to the virtual world we went to. So I think Mark, I know Cindy and Jim, all of us have really thought about how you deal with this. I agree with Jim. I'm not crazy about the term emeritus. It's not like an honor that we're bestowing on you as you pass on. I think there is a key role here, a key role, not only in helping as a mentor, but also I think a unique opportunity if we think about this. It's been 10 years since you approved the 12-12-12 regional plan. And there are things ahead. We'll talk about those tomorrow at the retreat. What are our priorities? Where do we think we should go? Stuff like that. That regional plan, just like we amended shore zone so we could deal with the non-littoral buoys, maybe should be updated. Maybe this. And what a greater opportunity than have, you know, the person that helped get that thing through the first time to sit there and sit back and think. Not have be stuck with all the meetings she has to go through, all the other stuff she has to juggle, but just, you know, and talk with staff, talk with us, talk with others about, okay, what is good, what is bad, and what's ugly, and what needs to be changed, what's good, what maybe fine tuning could be done, and present to us at an upcoming retreat a report, not unlike what we used to do on thresholds, like what's working, what's not working, but brought that out to us so that we can think about, you know, how we might want to deal with our like that again in a way that the whole board can kind of come together and talk about those things. And so I have to admit, though I want to work really well with the two gubernatorial appointees that have been here, I don't know that this is a situation where the state of California necessarily feels like they have to have a seat in order to make this decision. I think those of us that have worked with Joanne have spent a lot of time with her and now thinking about how we deal with this and also the transition that needs to be made means that all 15 of us, even our non-voting member, should have an opportunity to sit down and say, you know, how we handle this issue. And going through government operations and then also back to the full board seems to be an appropriate way for us to deal with that issue. And so I was very supportive of what you had to say, Mark. And I know it's heartfelt and you put a lot of thought into that. And I am very grateful for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Very, very much appreciate your comments. Okay, Belinda.
I'm not going to take too much time here, but I think, Joanne, one of the things that I want to convey, I think on behalf of all of us, is that the type of leader you are, you're a leader from behind. So the fact that your staff is so good is such a reflection on the way that you do work. So that's why I think this new role will be so fabulous, because you will help to develop those staffing skills in others. And that's what makes an organization great, is the leadership that you're developing to take things over and to implement vision. So thank you.
Thank you, Belinda. John.
Joanne, I was thinking one of the first times that after you started, when I was on this side of the podium with the La League, was holding Rosie as a small child. I think it may have been on the Shore Zone plan. Let's say it was probably next to Michael Donahoe or something. And she's about to get her driver's license. So time goes by. And I do want to thank you for all your commitment. Gosh, 8 years longer than anyone else. You know what a meat grinder this job can be. So that's an amazing accomplishment in and of itself. And throughout COVID, just your supportive staff and some of the missives that would be forwarded to me were very touching and just really heartfelt and compassionate towards what staff was going through and building that team and keeping people cohesive throughout the challenges of the COVID era, which sadly is still with us. But I certainly see the wisdom of your earnest desire to help build this, you know, mentor staff, I guess, and build that that leadership. My thoughts on this are just about the not you the person, but just the precedent or the policy and the principle, I guess, of this. And it would be helpful, I think, to me to just to Jim raise some questions about reporting structure, or, you know, it's not hard at all to imagine working in a transition period up until the point of a new director. I think the question I would have would be at that crossover point, if it's, like I said, if it's opt in or opt out, that was also raised elsewhere, would that be awkward? Barack Obama once said, we have one president at a time. I know you're not the president, but you know, you have a very important role in the basin. So I would just have concern about that, you know, the beyond when the new director, whether it's internal or external, comes on and how we're thinking about that. Mark, you mentioned that negotiating a package if we were to discontinue the term, I think. So that's, I'm just kind of left wondering what that kind of would entail. And again, is it an opt in or opt out? Is it renew or end? That's the only the little problem I have. And then in the future, would there be a future executive director also be eligible for this kind of a role, or past directors? So just those kind of issues. So since this was also new and also to the public, with this, you know, we have one page in the packet. Could we bring it back with some of these details on reporting structures spelled out, especially the point beyond the new director, just so we're, could it look like a consultancy arrangement during the transition up into like a renew point with the new director, just so sometimes new directors have new ideas, is as good as groundwork as you've laid. So I would just think, to me, I would just want to have some of those things spelled out, precedent beyond the new director, et cetera. And then, you know, take a position on that, as opposed to, and I'm not sure how that relates to the action we're being asked to take today.
No, John, I think the understanding is that this will all go back to operations next month for detail. Operations will then review it. Operations would then make a recommendation to the governing board, and then the governing board would do as it see fits. So there's plenty of filter between now and the time that it's going to be, you know, there'll be a public notice, there'll be two public hearings, and I think your concern should be covered by that. Does that help?
Yes, I mean, today is just, you know, I guess for the record, sharing our perspectives.
Yes.
That, or direction.
Yes, correct.
And again, my just to summarize all that, was I'm very comfortable in the transition, all that Joanne laid out, the kind of a consultancy, and emeritus also doesn't quite seem like the right title for this role. You know, easing that moment with the new director so that they don't have to make a hard decision on day one, or just clarifying, you know, maybe it's a renewal at that point or something that we help, you know, smooth the way. That would be my perspective of what makes sense at this point.
Thanks. Okay. Anybody else? Yes, Sue,
quick,
please.
Yeah, quick. Joanne, it's been an incredible honor, and you're not done, so I'm not really going to go there. But I was kind of concerned about this. This one talking about the emeritus. Because I've never worked, so I looked it up in the dictionary. At first, I thought it was going to be like a flock of emus or something. I had no idea what emeritus meant, really. And I used to be on the school board. I went, oh, okay, got it. So, you know, I'm reading it, talks about, you know, somebody's retired, but allowing to retain their title as an honor, but yeah, getting half paid, and says, no, they're not dead. It goes into a lot of discussion here, but whatever we call it, I think there's a very, very important role, obviously. And I have to agree with Bill saying, we have, I think, a pretty good process already aligned with where we should go to ops and then come back to the board. I'm very comfortable with that. And I think that would be a good operation there, a process moving forward. But, you know, whatever we call it, you're not an emu, so I agree that we need to find something else. And thank you for all your service. It's been great.
Thank you very much, Sue. Yes, Bud.
Well, Mark, you know, we have an expert at collaboration in this room, and it's an expert that taught all of us, and that changed the image of this organization from four-letter word to simply TRPA. And respected TRPA. And you know, over the years I've had situations in my own businesses and with my clients where, quite frankly, we were happy to see a changeover of chief operating officer, CEO, for different reasons. We're not happy to see this, and for obvious reasons. It's because of her talents. And Joanne, you taught everyone here in the basin about how important it is to get different groups talking to each other in collaboration. So I think that what you're suggesting here, as I understand it, is you're willing to collaborate with us while we work our way through this mess of trying to have to replace you. And, you know, I accept your offer in my non-voting capacity. And if I could vote, I would vote that you can't leave. But be that as it may, I say, let's take advantage of the collaborative skills of Joanne, what she has taught all of us. And Mark, I think your suggestion is good. I understand the members from California too, and from Nevada. Everyone wants to have a voice, but I think it can be a productive exercise. And let's do this. Let's work with Joanne. Let's try to find a collaborative resolution of this, you know, and not get hung up on words or a word, emeritus or whatever it is. I mean, the bottom line is we need to figure out an approach. We need to figure out a temporary solution and then a long-term solution. And it may be the temporary solution becomes the long-term solution. But, you know, I think that's what we need to do. So let's just move on. I think that, again, your suggestion is good. And if any of the other members of the board wish to be a part of that initial discussion before it comes to operations, fine, do it. Let's get all opinions on the table. But I think it's a good way to move.
Okay, anybody else? Wes.
I'm going to try to keep this straight. When Joanne called me to tell me of her decision, I was taken back a little bit, and I confided in her a few thoughts that I had about the TRPA then and now. And I got a chuckle out of her when I said, when I first moved here 31 years ago, TRPA was known as the, I can't say that in public, but Tahoe Regional Pain and something or another. But the thought of being part of this group was beyond abhorrent. How dare they tell me what I can do with my own ground? And you took over, and that all changed. And I'm very proud to be part of this. And I wish it wasn't itself. But we'll work through this, and you're not getting rid of us that easy.
Thank you, Wes. I appreciate that. Haley, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everyone, for saying what I'd like to say more eloquently than I will, particularly Bud. I think this, you know, all of us collaborating on this together is the right answer. And I think in the spirit of that, of the two states working together and as we transition together, thank you so much, Joanne, for your service and for being willing to help us transition. Thank you to Mark and Vince for bringing the expertise. I think the more expertise, the better. I don't have expertise in transitioning a board, so I'm really willing to listen to anyone that does and to have those ideas and being willing to bring those forward. And I think it's important too, Joanne, the phenomenal staff that we have at TRPA, for them to have some, you know, insight into what their future looks like and what their leadership looks like. So that's why I'm so thankful for this process, that they know sort of the road we're heading, that the agency is heading and timelines and transitions and what's coming. That's really important to me too, that the staff feel like they know what's happening and they do in this process. So my two cents for what it's worth is the more collaboration is the better. And then having it go through ops is really great too. So thanks all for allowing us to have a say in this and for everyone, you know, having this conversation and talking about collaboration.
Thank you, Ashley. Okay. I mean, sorry, say Haley, Ashley, please.
You know, they just turned on music here, so I don't want to comment anymore. I just, my point was really just that I think there's no problem in having a California and Nevada person on this negotiating team and then coming to governance. And I just want to really echo that, you know, we did speak to leadership and that was part of the request. And so I just want to make sure that that's reflected.
Well, I'm okay with Vince doing it. I'm okay with Vince doing it. Because it's going to come back.
Great. That would be excellent. Yeah.
Right.
And he has expertise in this area. So great. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Cindy.
Well, my years here have been very short. My years knowing you have been much longer. And I was thinking back and again, today isn't goodbye. So I don't want to get emotional or go there with our long history, but In addition to the leadership and wisdom and commitment and dedication to Lake Tahoe, your mentorship and wisdom and your willingness to share with those of us that weren't in positions of as much stature as yours, I recognized that early on. And the confidence you had in me, the candor you shared are so appreciated and just there. And I think the art form that I have found with TRPA are the committees that we have that are so balanced. And we are very thoughtful about who serves on committees and making sure both states and local governments and everybody has a seat at the table through our existing processes. I have no problem with the structure now because Vince is on operations as well, and he can work with Mark on this. We have the state of Nevada represented on that committee. We have local government on that committee too. So I think that is one of the, in addition to this board being artfully put together, each of our committees is so well balanced. And I honor that. And I honor that we're going to have quite a bit of discussion next month because this is all still so new. And I think this is one step. We have two more discussion points today. And then, you know, when we get to the selection of your successor, that is going to really require a dancing act with both states and local government and everybody and outside, potential outside advisors as well. So I think that, Joanne, I can't thank you enough. I think this role, you know, we can name it a lot of different things, but we know what your intent is, and I honor that. You've always been that to me personally, and I see that in your staff and in the comments we've heard from everybody. So thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Thanks for being a great vice chair through this process. Really, really appreciate that. Anybody else? Okay. Looks like we're going to public comment. Catherine?
If any member of the public would like to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on to address the board. Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Thank you.
We've left them speechless.
Yes. Okay, thank you. So let's go with a motion. So,
Mr. Chair, as stated right here, I move the transition of the executive director to, I guess, emeritus status to be discussed and delegate that to the chair to negotiate terms.
Okay. And I would say that, you know, I trust Vince and I trust his experience. And I would like him to be a part of it. And I very much appreciate all the kind words that I've said today. I trust this. I trust this body. I trust this process. And if Vince wants to do it, I trust him, even without me. That would be fine, because I think that's what we need here. So, the way I see this, it's a great opportunity to get closer to Vince. For that reason, I would like to be part of it.
Well, are you modifying the...
Yes.
Are we still going to the operations committee?
Yes.
Yes, still okay. Coming back.
All right. Yeah. So I assume that... it really is however you want to do it.
Yeah, right? Let's do
this. The way it's kind of written up here.
Why don't we just trust each other and just say a motion to direct the chair and Vince to negotiate a proposal with the executive director, with the assistance of John Marshall and John and Chris Kyler, along the lines of the discussion that we've all had so beautifully today. Is everyone good with that? Yes.
Yeah.
And so that would, that's the language of the motion then. And yes. We're not be voting on the word emeritus or
no.
Just defining the, right. The process. No. We're voting no. On the process. Yes. Okay. Just clarifying.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Could I just clarify? I just want to make sure that your motion includes that it's going to your committee.
Yes.
And then it's coming to the full committee.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Along the lines of all the discussion that we've had today.
Okay.
Correct.
As long as we're doing that, I'll vote yes. Thank you.
Okay. Is everybody comfortable with that motion? I just don't want anyone to be uncomfortable. So, Mari, would you please read the roll?
Ms. Salding.
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda.
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. We're going to move to second item, appointment of interim executive director as of July 1, 2022 for discussion and action. Information on this item can be found on page 283. I'll just lead in on this just to give you a little background, a few considerations that I think might be helpful in this discussion. Given that Joanne is stepping down and the need to search for a new executive director, we obviously need a new interim executive director. Our interim ED will need to serve from July 1, 2020 till the ED position is filled by the governing board. We currently have two deputy executive directors, Julie Reagan and John Hester. My understanding from my personal understanding is that Julie has indicated that she will be a candidate for the permanent position. And because of that, I would highly recommend that we ask John Hester to keep the process clean to serve as executive director. I have spoken with John offline. He has graciously indicated his willingness, but I will need it for the record. We will need it for the record. The appointment would, I would propose that the appointment would come with a salary adjustment that will be brought back to operations and governance and then to the full board next month. Those are the thoughts. That's the background. It's now in the hands of the board. Anybody have any questions or comments about that?
Just a quick question. So
yes,
does this mean that Mr. Hester is not going to be running for the office? And I don't mean to put you in a spot, but I'm going to exclude one. I want to just make
sure. That's correct.
All right, thank you.
We had that discussion too.
Yeah, I just didn't hear that.
Yeah, no worries. Great question. Who's next?
Jim.
Oh, Cindy.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Cindy.
That's okay. Oh. I just think that's a great solution. Julie aptly served in the role when Joanne was out, and we understand your interest and respect the process. And I think this is an elegant solution. And thank you very much, John, for being willing to do that.
Okay. Thank you. And do we have a motion, Cindy?
Have to go to.
Oh, yeah. 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 Sorry.
Shelley's up there.
Sorry. Jim.
Jim.
Jim, go ahead. Sorry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just ditto. I do think the process, I have tremendous faith in both, but I do think the process is always just cleaner and smoother if the candidate, somebody that's not interested in it full time, steps in the interim. And John, I have terrific faith in you to do the job. Although now that I hear that you will do it, I question your judgment. But so I'm conflicted. No, I'm kidding.
You want me to read it?
So, but I also, you mentioned, Mark, about the compensation as well. And I do think that if somebody is stepping in as an acting or an interim, they deserve this, the compensation as if they were in that position permanent. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, Jim. Okay. Is there any further? I'm looking for hands. I don't see any hands. And I'm going to ask Catherine to take us to public comment.
If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person or by clicking the hand raise button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone to be called on and unmuted. And Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to appoint John Hester as the interim executive director, effective July 1, 2022.
Okay. All right. Is there any question or comment about that motion? The compensation will go to ops and then will have to be confirmed by the board next month. That I'll just request that the motion be amended to include those things. And Maria, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you. We're moving to item number 3, designation of process for selection of permanent executive director for decision and action, or discussion and action. Information on this item can be found on page 285. Again, I would like to introduce this item by giving you some background and maybe help with identifying some considerations and proposals for the governing board discussion here. So after significant thought and consultation, my thought is that we have an executive director search that is open. And when I say open, I mean inclusive of both internal candidates and external candidates. I suggest that we retain a search firm instead of using the TRPA HR department. I suggest that we focus our search regionally, focused on primarily the West and also primarily on Nevada and California. I propose the governing board members recommend names of search firms to the staff as soon as possible. I understand that there's some experience, and I'd like to request that you share that experience by sharing names of search firms that have been successful in the past with staff. I propose that the governing board direct staff to issue an RFP in early June after receiving and researching those firm names. I propose that we bring to operations and governance and the full governing board next month, June, a recommendation for selection of a search firm so that we can all consider it both at operations and at the governing board. And I propose that in June, we agendize an action item for how the governing board will interact with subsequent selection processes, e.g. whether it will be an ad hoc committee, whether it will be our pick that does the review, whether it will be operations and governance that will be doing this review, or whether there will not be a committee during the review. Those are the I'm just laying those things out for purposes of discussion so that people can be thinking about those items. And I'd be happy to reiterate any of those things if you wish. But now I'm asking the board to, the members of the board to comment and to ask any questions. Yes, please, Barbara.
Thank you. I know Bill wanted to talk too. My question is to you, if we're talking about what's been mentioned, that we want to make sure that we do the processes correctly. I'd like to know how Joanne was selected, what process we went through for that, then, if that's something that we're looking at. So I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
but I'd love to know what it is.
Absolutely. And what we can do is both operations and the GB, we can actually kind of outline some of those questions, answers to some of those questions for you, so that you have a full understanding of those things. So provide your questions. We'll put together outlines for what we think is what will be helpful. And that would probably be helpful. So I agree. We should probably talk a little bit about that.
Barbara? I was just going to answer, provide a little bit more of an answer for Barbara. Yeah. And that although I was not on the agency at that time, there was a determination that they didn't need to go external. And so they just asked Joanne to interview for the job. And apparently they were happy with the interview.
And to add to that just a little bit, they requested Joanne to make a presentation at the governing board, and she knocked their socks off.
So the only clarification, Mark, I'd like to get is on your scope of search. It would, I think, behoove us to keep it as open as possible so that we look at, you know, national candidates. While I know we have a tremendous amount of talent in California and Nevada, there are highly qualified people in other places. Mm-hmm. So I would hate to limit us in that way.
Sure. And we can do Western United States. We can do national. Sometimes it's a little bit easier, and I'd like to hear what Vince has to say about this.
Okay.
But sometimes it's a little bit easier if you are focused on the Western United States, perhaps. But I'm open.
And Belinda, I just wanted to clarify that we're not seeking to limit geographically where candidates are coming from. It's more of a cost item on how why do you want the search firm to be putting out and recruiting? So let's just to be really clear, there would be no suggestion that we would only limit this to California and Nevada residents or something like that.
And could I ask, and maybe I could ask a question, because I think for ops committee, it's coming back to the operations and governance committee with the firms. And we could ask them to propose on what those cost differentials might be. And then we could look at, because then you get into bringing candidates in from across the country. I mean, there's many costs. Absolutely. Associated. And I think that's a fair question for them. I'm comfortable Western-wise, but I understand the need to at least see what would those cost differential be for firms.
And I would just follow up with saying that now with, you know, yeah, social media, the way that recruitment
gets picked
is
up
done
by everybody. Yeah.
Okay, Jim.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I like what you laid out. I think that's a good plan forward. And it's a little difficult for me because, you know, I've been working with TRPA for a long time now. I have so much respect and faith in the staff that is here with the agency that I actually don't have any doubt that anybody could step into this, not just anybody, but, you know, that we have talent here that could step into the position. And that's kind of what Joanne did last time. And I think that was Barbara's question. All that being said, this is a really important agency. And I get that I'm biased, but this is a very high profile agency. It's very high profile on the Nevada side, on the California side, US, globally. We heard about the Chile partnership, and I do think it is extremely important to at least go outside and have that opportunity. All that being said, I have a tremendous faith in the staff. I also think that time is a consideration. We've got a lot of momentum, and we've all talked about how we're in a better place than we were 10, 12 years ago. My experience, and I've gone through a lot of transitions in my own department with staff, my experience is the longer that these searches go, the more at risk of things. And it's going to help with Joanne on in transition, but I still think, you know, when it goes back to operations, I would like to see some consideration regarding if we do go outside and search to make sure that it can be done in a timely, and it's not a long protracted process, because time is of the essence, and this is important work here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. Yes, Barbara, 1 second, sir.
Yep. Thank you. And I know, Bill, you had a question. Are you still waiting? Okay. The one thing I want to say is that I really want someone that knows Tahoe. I mean, that's very important to this committee, to the state, to both states, is somebody that actually knows and understands. If we bring somebody new in that we have to educate, I don't know how, I mean, I'm looking at some of the other agencies that I've hired outside, and they haven't done so well, at least for my, and I'm talking about school districts, but they haven't done so well. But I am concerned about going national. That I don't know that that's a good idea. I don't particularly have a preference for the Western. I mean, that's something that we can talk about, I'm sure. But I need somebody that knows Tahoe. And it both sides, there's California and there's Nevada side, but you have to know Tahoe. So that is a concern to me as well. Thank you.
Thank you. You're next, my friend.
Sorry, Bill. Yeah. real quick, where do we turn in? I'm doing a search right now for our conservancy, California Tahoe Conservancy, and we do have a firm that's familiar with Tahoe now, I would guess, to a point where just throw that in. Throw their name in, they'll give it to you. Okay, I will find
He's
it.
Volunteered. Our friend Thanks, John Marshall has volunteered.
Thank you, John.
Chris will also gladly accept
the name. He's part of the team.
Okay, great. And I'll just ditto with what Barbara said. I do think it's important that someone's familiar with Tahoe.
Thank you. Very much appreciated. Bill.
Yeah, they have to know all the acronyms, right? Yeah, took me a while, and I was still from California. This is where I thought where Vince was going to be working with you, because he had some ideas about how we were doing this stuff. So I think that's key, because he had some good ideas, and I think those all go to John and Chris and you, and we work this out for how we're going to deal with it. I don't think national necessarily is scary, but I do think I think Joanne has created quite an agency, quite a reputation, and others have seen what we do, and there might be some people out there that maybe don't know exactly where Dollar Point is or stuff like that, but they could, with this staff and with us, get up to speed rather quickly. But has great management, collaborative strength that would fill in. I don't know who that person might be, but I wouldn't want to shut down any doors. And I think we have an excellent internal candidate that we all should consider too, because of what she's done and the fact that she's done an awful lot of stuff as representing the agency in DC, and, you know, manages to get some money for us and do a lot of other good stuff. Cares about Tahoe, so that's all part of the mix when we try to get someone to replace someone like Joanne. So thanks.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you laying out a very logical process for going about this decision. The one question I had, maybe it relates, Jim, to timing. I mean, we do have a solid transition team and plan and institutional knowledge. So in a sense, I feel they're comfortable in this moment. So with a search firm, I guess the question is, if we take it that a person needs to have a lot of Tahoe knowledge, is very specialized in a sense position, will we necessarily find that person through that firm that we wouldn't find on our own? And is there a pathway where we try it internally first, and if we're not satisfied with the candidate pool, then bring in the consultant firm? I just want to keep an eye on the budget. I'm not sure how much that costs. I certainly have been involved in other efforts where a search firm was brought in, a big chunk of change was spent, and the person was, you know, right out the back door, probably would have found their way there anyway. So I guess, if everyone thinks we need a search firm, that's one thing. But would there be a huge risk to trying it internally first, saving the money, and then using a search firm if that's not producing the desired results? Or,
and thank you for the point. I think that we can, if we do have come to that conclusion, my strong inclination is that we will not come to that conclusion. But if we do, we have the ops and we have governance next month in order to make that decision. So I appreciate the comment. Alexis, just one second, Jim.
I think that Shelley had her hand up before me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Shelley.
It's okay. I'll let Shelley go and then I'm happy to.
With this sheen, the beautiful white sheen on the back of your office, I could not see that hand, but go right ahead.
Thank you, Alexis. I'm torn. I agree with John's comments. I mean, part of me wants to preserve Joanne's legacy. I think, as we've all stated, she has been an exceptionally, effective ED. And frankly, I'd like her on the selection committee. Because I think it's really important to maintain our momentum. And that's why we decided, when we put together our search group, in 2009, to limit our search to Joanne, who is obviously serving as our legal counsel. I think it really does need to be Tahoe-centric, to be honest with you. I mean, this is highly complex. Our codes are complex. The history of this agency is complex. The interrelationship among agencies is complex. This is a powder keg, and I think that is ready to explode at any moment unless, we do what is necessary to contain it. And I think Barbara was alluding in her comments to Carson City's search for a new superintendent of schools. We found somebody who was eminently qualified in New Hampshire. Brought him out, he was interviewed, and then they failed to negotiate a contract with him because he was insisting on a one-year contract, more than a one-year contract, because he's relocating his family from back east. And the local board of local school board declined to accommodate him. So I think it's also important in this process to be very specific about what we are offering, so that there's no misunderstanding about the, obviously they serve at the discretion of the board, but I think if you're going to relocate somebody from out of state, especially from back east, they're going to want that sort of assurance. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done between now and the next meeting, including, as a number of the other board members have alluded to, the cost of retaining a search consultant, the cost of potentially having to relocate somebody lock, stock, and barrel from a remote location. So I kind of agree with John. I think let's see what we can find, within our own list of contacts. I mean, you've got a lot of well-connected people on the governing board, a lot of well-connected people who governing board members know. And I'd like to keep this as close to the agency as possible.
Thank you very much, Shelley. I appreciate that. Alexis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm honored to serve on the Operation and Governance Committee with Shelley as our chair, and And I think that we should have this discussion and give a recommendation to the board. That's why we have these committees, is that we can fully vet these ideas of both national search or doing an internal search with our HR folks, and the pros and cons of what that would look like and hearing from the experts. And so I think that we could use some really good time at our next meeting to look at those options. And staff has heard both sides of what this board would like to do. And so I'd like to have a more detailed discussion with the operations committee, if that's possible, because I think that we'd have more information and have a better dialogue about it. And I think there's pros and cons to both. Thank you.
And I think that's a reality. It's not just a possibility, it's going to happen. So thank you for that, for the comment. Vince, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for accepting accepting me into the fold on this. It's gonna be a lot of work, really interesting. And I think the first step, you know, which we can't get to fast enough given the timing of Joanne's transition, is to get a job description put together. And I don't know if HR has anything or has started on anything, but for us to reach out to people, I mean, a lot of people will know TRPA and what the position entails, but some of the other connections won't. And that will be the first thing that the agency, if we end up going with an agency, will want. So I think we should get working on that right away. I'm anxious to see to get that myself, and anxious to be part of this. And yeah, the stakes are very high. We all love this agency and what it does in Tahoe, and it does make me feel better knowing that Joanne will be around to help in the transition going forward, hopefully. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Vince. And I've spoken with the HR director. I've asked her to put together the job description. I've asked her to work with Joanne, who knows the job description the best. And then we can, it will be vetted and made very transparent through our HR director. And then it will be provided to the rest of us when it's ready to go. But that's in the process. And thank you for raising the issue. Yes, Belinda.
So I'm sure that this has been in the works already, but just to say it out loud, I'm assuming that you're going to have a special governance and ops committee meeting. I mean, it just seems like it would be too much to try to get this done the morning of a board meeting and then have a report out. I mean, this is serious stuff. And I would just highly recommend that there be at least 2 weeks before the governance, before our governing board meeting, a meeting of governance and ops that, you know, may will likely have to roll over to the next meeting to do research, investigate, you know, some of the issues that might come up, and give more thoughtful time to the process. I think that might be indicated.
Well, I'm going to have to defer to the executive team and HR, the HR director, on that. The thought was that we would be doing a lot of interim work, that we'd be preparing a nice packet, that the packet would contain all of the information, and that everybody at ops would be looking at the same information and the same detail as everybody at governing. And if everybody reads their packet and is fully understanding it, and then they hear the report from operations, perhaps what we do is we calendar, we agendize it for next month. And if we need a little bit more time to make a decision, we could bump it, but we try to get what we can get done next month.
What I suggest is we kind of take all this comment in and come back to the chair and to the chair of ops, Shelley, with a proposed schedule. But I think your point is very well taken, Belinda. This is a chunk of work and it may need a special meeting that we can do, you know, through Zoom or whatever. And so I think I think that's, I don't think we need to decide that right now, but to kind of go back and look and see, put all the pieces together up on a whiteboard and see, just sketch it out as to how much time we think that's all going to take.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, if I could just jump in as well. I think if we make the decision to go with a search firm, it's probably going to take us most of the month to really come up with a good set of candidates for that search firm. I appreciate your concern. I'm concerned about schedule too, and we probably will have to have special meetings of the committees for several months to go through all this stuff. But if we're going to do a competition for a search firm and consider different search firms, that's going to take a bit of time. That's my only concern.
So one of the things I just want to, I know that there's been a little bit of the question that, and what Mark proposed is that staff put out an RFP ASAP so that we can bring to you the proposal was for a recommendation, but maybe the top three or whatever at the next, in the June meeting for both ops and the full board to decide on selection of a search committee, if that's the way you want to go. So the next meeting of
ops. Being a search firm.
The search firm, sorry. Either a selection of a search firm or saying we don't need it at this time or ever. So to do that though, we need to get an RFP out basically next week. And then have it run for a couple weeks and then do some very quick run through. And I'm going to look at Chris and Ashley to see if, Angela, sorry. To see if we, is that a truly realistic? Because then we need to, remember, it's not just a month from now, it's three weeks from now when we have to have the packet ready.
Mark?
Yes.
Can I interject something?
Yes, please, Shelley.
I'm a little confused by this sense of urgency. I mean, we've just appointed an interim director who's perfectly capable of taking the reins after Joanne steps down at the end of June. You know, we shouldn't rush this process. I think this needs to be very deliberate. And, we could take a look at some of the recommended search consultants at the next meeting of the ops committee, and we can make a recommendation as to, based on cost, based on, based on their reputation in the industry, we can make a recommendation of whether or not to pursue a contract with a search consultant or to proceed without one. But I think we need to do this in a very organized and consistent manner, and we shouldn't rush to the finish line. I mean, there is no desperate need to do all of this by the end of June 30th. I mean, from a budgetary standpoint, yes, we could put in a placeholder. Chris could estimate what he thinks it might cost based on his experience. We can augment the budget after the budget's approved. I mean, I'm just a little bit concerned about this need to get all of this done within 1 month's time. I think it's too important.
And Shelley, I don't disagree. I think that's a very good point. And it's not all within 1 month. I think the only thing that we were looking at doing was getting meetings going within a month. We're not looking at trying to make a decision within a month.
Well, but so, Mark, even putting out the RFP, I think the board would like to see what that RFP looks like. And I think it's appropriate for operations and governance to review it before it hits the screen. That's my concern.
Thank you.
You bet.
I'm sorry. Are we waiting then a month to issue the RFP?
I think that's the proposal, yes.
Angela and I have talked. We do have a list of usual suspects of firms that specialize in this type of search, and it'd be interesting to see if CTC is one of those. I just wanted to clarify, are we going to wait and not issue the RFP until June?
I think the proposal from Shelley is the board, the ops and governance and the board look at the RFP. Yes. Go ahead, Joe.
So, I mean, I don't have any problem with the ops for the board looking at the RFP. I've seen enough RFP, though, for search firms that I'm pretty confident it could just go out. I don't want to rush it, but my experience working with federal agencies and local agencies and state agencies, when there's an interim for a long period of time, things can unravel. So when I made the mention, let's be mindful of time, I'm not necessarily saying we have to get this done in a month, but I don't want it being a prolonged search to find a perfect unicorn either. So, right. I mean, we have to find that middle ground. If I heard you right, Mr. Chair and John, I'm actually like what you've laid out.
Okay.
I like the idea, and I just want to make, because this conversation has been a bit all over the map, and so I don't know if we're all tracking it the same, or at least I don't think I am. So what I'm hearing is staff would issue an RFP, get some responses, those would go to ops. Ops would then go through the decision-making process of whether we want to select one of those search firms, or just through our own channels and our own HR department, at least open it up to outside of the agency. And I like all of that. I think, I don't know where we landed on whether to go outside of the agency or just go with an internal candidate. I have tremendous faith in the internal candidate. And that's what makes this less agonizing or less, you know, I think we're in good shape either way, but I do have a lot of respect for the public and for the public process. I just think optically, it's just always good to open it out to an external candidate. Doesn't have to be across the country, but just to have some process where other folks can compete. There's a lot of talent in the basin, not just at TRPA, but TRPA is the best. But there is a lot of talent here. And so that is what we're talking about, is a process where the RFP goes out, comes back to ops, decision on whether to go with the firm, our own processes. Ideally, in my opinion, we go external, but that'll be up to ops. And in the meantime, we have John Hester. That's going to be a great interim.
Yeah.
And we have a great candidate.
With one ad. Yes, I agree with all of that. And then we will also come back and we will talk about basically the process and whether it will be our pick, ops and governance, who it is that's going to actually be on the selection committee. So those two things will be those will be the items that will happen in June. That's the proposal. Yes.
Thank you, Mark. I just want to throw my bias and my prejudice in here. I've been involved in public organizations since I was 19 years old, which makes me not an authority on anything. But it has been my experience that every organization that I've been a member of has its own culture. And I think that we would do well to look inside of our own organization due to that culture that has developed over the last 15 years or so. And I do believe that although Joanne has made a decision to step down, I I think that she should have a very strong voice in who replaces her. And I don't want to see somebody from the outside come in and do what I've seen happen in other organizations when they brought somebody in that had no clue what was going on inside the organization. Just my two cents.
Thank you, Wes. I appreciate that. We have a couple more hands on the board. Vince, please.
I just wanted to respond about the timing of this. Yeah, we don't want to rush this by any means, but we don't want to drag it out, because even in good circumstances, these searches take 6 months, maybe longer, to do. And that's just, that is a long time. And so I think, you know, we need to have something between board meetings. The board will need to delegate responsibility, as we said, to one committee. or group, and it might be an existing committee or it might be an ad hoc committee just for this search. And then that committee will need to meet more frequently than once a month, or this will take 2 years. So I think, you know, that's what we'll have to figure out is what that group is that is going to do these interim steps. And the communication can be going out to the board in the meantime for comments and suggestions and ideas and things. But if we just wait every month, there's just so many different steps in sequence. We'll just, it'll take a long time. So that will be, yeah, the big work is figuring out who does this and what that schedule is, I think.
Thank you, Vince. I appreciate that. Alexis.
Well, I think to Vince's point, it's really important that the operations committee looks at a schedule and kind of vets that when we meet and discuss all these options, including the search firm and, you know, what an internal search would look like if we did that, all of those kind of considerations. So just one more item that hopefully the staff can pull together for that staff report for us. But I'm sure that we can get this done and on schedule and, you know, get a really cohesive plan together and have it vetted by the operations committee. Thanks.
So I think
thank you, Alexis. Yes, Wes, did you have another?
I think Ashley has
it. Oh, Ashley, please. Ashley, I can't see that.
Yeah, just a minor comment to go to get to the operations committee, but it would be just helpful if we could have, if that committee and maybe the full board could just get a short memo on any legal implications associated with the bi-state compact, right? I know that the rules have to be from the more stringent of the two states. So I'm not sure if California or Nevada have rules about external searches versus internal searches. But it would be great just to get some more clarity from John or from the legal committee also on anything we need to know so that we're staying well within bounds for this process.
Great. Thank you so much. John, you got that?
I got that. And I think for staff, the one key direction that we need from you all, which we haven't, I don't feel, gotten direct direction, is on whether or not you want us to put together an RFP and get it out on the street in time. Yes. To bring you back potential search firm candidates to consider at next month's meeting.
Okay, I go ahead.
So I would definitely support that as long as we included the RFP estimated costs and that we know what the differences would be between a local or regional search versus a more national search. Just to have that information as part of the RFP.
Anybody else on that question from John?
I guess just want to clarify timeline too. That's really important, obviously. The timeline as a part of the RFP, I imagine that would be, but I just throw it out there. Because I didn't include that.
Okay. And maybe the other component is to get an estimate of what it would be to just do an internal process. So.
Okay. All right. We got comments on that. Do we want to go to public? Should we go to public comment? Anybody else have any questions, concerns? Catherine, will you please take us to public comment?
If any member of the public would like to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on to address the board. Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you. Any other further questions or comments? Not seeing any. Cindy, do you have a motion?
I was out for a lot of the discussion. I apologize. I had a call I had to take. So, Jim, did you capture enough of a motion here?
You kind of identified it the best of anyone, Jim. So go right ahead.
I think so, if he doesn't scary. Mind.
I'll give it a shot. So I guess the motion would be for the agency to go out with an RFP before the operations committee, to get responses for the operations committee in June. That RFP would talk about the cost and the time for a search. Then at the operations committee in June, there will be discussion on whether there will be utilizing a search firm or the costs associated with doing the internal process. And then the operations committee will make the recommendation to the full board.
As well as what the process will be for purposes of the entire search, correct?
So as well as the process. That's part of it, yes. Well as the process for the search, whether it's using a search firm or doing our internal process, and then of course that would have to be defined.
But mm-hmm. Which body, for instance, RPIC, operations, which body will actually be handling that?
Yeah. And then the internal process to the governing board of which committees it will be going through.
Thank you. Okay. Everybody okay with that? Okay. Please call the roll. Maria?
Ms. Alding.
Clarification on Jim's motion. Jim, obviously, I was a little confused by your last statement. What about the interview process once candidates are identified? Do you want that to be discussed at operations as well?
I don't think that. I think that's going to be the body. We're just talking about the body, and then the body is going to.
Kelly is asking for clarification about is, you know, the one thing that the chair added to your motion, Jim, was to say which committee is going to take the lead going forward, whether it be ops, RPIC, ad hoc. And so Shelley, that would probably be the committee that would conduct any preliminary interviews and make, you know, maybe move forward the whatever number of candidates they feel appropriate. Is that does that clarify?
Is that a recommendation that the chair will make or the full board?
That ops will make to us, and then the board will make a decision.
Correct.
Ops, you know, it is probably a little conflicted. If operations, it's between operations and RPIC.
But we recognize that conflict.
Okay.
I mean, the board will make a decision.
Oh no, I understand that. But in terms of narrowing the field, will either ops or RPIC be narrowing the field of candidates to advance to the board?
I guess I'm confused now, and I'm the one that made the motion. But I was thinking of the context of our decision making this afternoon of how are we doing the search for a candidate, but not necessarily nailing down the entire interview committee process, committees, who's going to be involved. I didn't think we were there yet. And so my motion didn't really contemplate that.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to clarify that, Jim. So that was not included. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. So is everyone clear on the motion? Okay. Maria, please call a roll.
Ms. Alding.
Yes.
Ms. Conrad-Zeta.
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski.
Yes, with one clarification that the candidate can pronounce Nevada and the firm that we hire.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your patience and your thoughtfulness and for just the trust that I think we're building with this group. Number 10. Oh, John, sorry.
No report.
Thank you. Agenda item number 10, governing board member reports. Do we have any governing board member reports? Yes, please.
It's so ironic, though. I'm leading parallel lives here, it seems, these days. After I spoke with Joanne, and Joanne broke the news to me about her leaving, I said, well, I better tell my boss. And so, you know, because of our, you know, finally we got together and I said, well, I got news for you regarding TRPA. And he says, well, you go first and I got news for you. So we've talked about TRPA and where we are. You know, I am sad to report that, but happy for my director. Director Brad Kroll has been nominated to be on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, if you haven't heard. He still needs to go through the confirmation process. But it's quite an honor, and it's quite a feather in the cap for Nevada to have somebody on that commission. So I'm very pleased for him and very pleased for his nomination. Sad for our loss in Nevada and at our department, but just wanted to make sure that everybody knew about that. And we'll be struggling and working with the governor on what transition for the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources looks like. So.
It's exceptional. Exceptional talent for an exceptionally important job. Thank you, Jim, for that report. Can anyone top that? Okay. We will go to...
Ashley has her hand raised.
Oh, yes, please. I'm so sorry, Ashley. I can't see that hand
on that. No worries. I'm here at Wilder waiting. I'll see you all soon. But my daughter's here with me, and so I am... Just today, as much as we've taken on these really important topics, I'm really, you know, also distracted by the news coming out of South Texas. And given that we are a public board, I just wanted to acknowledge, you know, the fear and the loss and the heartache in South Texas right now. And just, you know, as TRPA, stand in solidarity with everyone confronting violence and dealing with loss today. And it's been on my mind all day. So I just wanted to say that and, you know, and ask that we all keep those folks in our thoughts.
Thank you very much, Ashley. That's critical. And we do really important work here at this agency, and we also, as part of the leadership that we have here, we also owe basically our communities and our states and the world perspective on other really important issues. And so thank you, Ashley, for bringing that up. And I couldn't agree with you more. We've got to do better, and we've got to be as empathetic and responsive as we possibly can given those circumstances. So thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Ashley for saying that, and certainly agree, as a father of a child in school, it's a heartbreaking incident that's totally unacceptable, and hopefully we as a country can change that. I just wanted to thank Cody Bass for filling in for me the last 2 months while I had work responsibilities, and I thought it was a interesting discussion around the cell tower and the idea of a communication infrastructure plan. I know we have a lot of competing priorities, but that's something that I would be in agreement with, as well as he also raised the idea of taking another look at TAUs for vacation rentals. I just bring these up as examples of, you know, that's something I support as well, looking at those things. And as we go into our retreat tomorrow and think about the next phase with leadership here, there's a lot of weighty issues out there that we'll have to wrestle with as a board, and looking for staff leadership at the director level to help us move through those and other issues. So I look forward to our discussion tomorrow as we kind of move forward to the next stages.
Thanks, John. Anybody else? Okay. We will move to board committee reports. Local government and housing. You had a You had a long one.
Yeah. And real quick, just because I don't want to prolong the meeting here. Sorry.
Yeah.
We had two staff recommendation items. First one was about 9 policy level options on cover type, density, and pilot programs to facilitate development of more workforce housing. Very exciting conversation. Karen Fink did an amazing job. If you have any questions, talk to Karen. And then the second one was the code amendments related to updates to achievable housing definition and deed restriction compliance program. Another very important conversation we had. I'm sorry that's why it took so long this morning. Came up with some direction for staff. They're going to be meeting, I believe, with both of these in RPIC coming up, I believe. And so you'll be hearing more. And again, if you have any questions, talk to Karen or myself. Happy to give you a little bit more information. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you so much. Operations and governance. Legal Committee 0, by the way. Operations and governance. Shelley?
Well, we're going to have a busy committee meeting next month. And so we need to plan accordingly. I'll have that offline conversation with Chris. Thank you.
Thank you. EI Transportation Public Outreach, Jim.
No report. We did not meet.
Thank you. Forest Health and Wildfire, Bud.
No report. We did not meet either.
Okay. Thank you, Bud. And thanks for your contribution today. Really appreciate it. RPIC, Bill.
I guess RPIC's going to get some housing stuff. So.
Yes, you will. Okay, it looks like we're at our final public comment period. Maybe Catherine, can you read us through the rules there and then take us through public comment? That'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any member of the public wishing to address the governing board on any item listed or not listed on the agenda, including items on the consent calendar, may do so at this time. Individuals or groups who have already commented on items listed on the agenda are not permitted to comment on that same topic. The governing board is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public during this public comment period. The board will hear comments on any single topic not on the agenda for up to but not to exceed 30 minutes. They will hear as many unique comments as possible and will hear comments for up to but not more than a total of 60 minutes. All unheard comments can be submitted via email to mambler@trpa.gov and will be forwarded to all governing board members. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board at this time, please raise your hand now, either in person by clicking the raised hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on to address the board. We have a virtual hand raised, Ken Caseman. If you unmute, you can address the board.
Hi, members of the board. This is Ken Caseman. I'm the division manager for research analysis. And I just felt it important to say on behalf of staff and really on behalf of myself, but I think many staff feel this way, but thank you for your deliberations today and the discussions about, Joanne's position. I think we're very excited at the prospect of continuing to learn from her and, as we all have for so many years, really appreciate, and admire her and her leadership and wanted to express that thanks from the staff perspective. And also just wanted to echo, mention the appreciation for, the comments about the agency's culture and ensuring that our next executive director fits within the culture that has been created over the years. And I just wanted to make those comments.
Thank you, Ken, very much. I very much appreciate those.
There are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay. So it looks like we're down to item 13. I'm just going to draw out the adjournment here a little bit. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
You have a motion to recess.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh, yes. Recess. Sorry. All in favor of recessing, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Ah. Thank you.